Andrew, and today I'm joined by
Kevin,
Keith,
Wendell,
Xavier,
Peter the Second.
So it's been also another slow news week. So before we get to our main topic of a board game review and a discussion of the winter 2015 anime season, we're going to get into some news. So during a podcast, which I forgot to look up the name of because I'm so prepared, it came out that Mel Brooks is working on the script to Spaceballs 2. Is anyone excited about this?
That'll be
somewhat
interesting.
He's still alive?
Of course.
Yeah.
He was on Conan O'Brien not too long ago.
Yes, yes, yes.
Wow.
Oh, no, Spaceballs is a great movie, but I don't know if like a sequel is necessary.
I don't think it's almost necessary.
Because wasn't Spaceball like sort of a parody of like the first three, or at least the first Star Wars movie?
Yeah. Yeah. Like
if they do a parody to like the prequels.
I'm so excited for Jar Jar Binks' Spaceballs version.
You're not excited.
I'm excited.
So what are they going to do? He's going to make him Jewish now?
No, it's going to be Jar Jar Binks. Nothing's going to change. They're just going to put him into parody.
That would actually be the best version of
Binks or something.
No, it's going to be Jar Jar Binks. He won't have to change anything for Jar Jar. Everything else will change, just not Jar Jar.
I think Spaceballs is kind of a parody of the first two, no? Because he kind of tells him like that he's like I'm your father, twice removed, and like,
best friends, roommates, cousin.
Yeah, exactly. So
uncle,
that clearly,
brothers, sisters from another relative.
Yeah, so it's
so
clearly,
what
like,
does that make you to me?
Nothing. So that has to have been around like the second movie.
All right.
Mel Brooks has wanted to do this movie for a long time, almost like I'm guessing 15 years now. But I think Rick Moranis doesn't want to do this film because he's more of a family man now, because he's taking care of his kids after his wife died of cancer. So it all depends if he wants to do the second movie or not. So we'll see what happens
but
with that.
I know that Rick Moranis recently did, I think, two like kind of folk or country albums kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
he's
focusing mostly his creative side on country music. So I think he's just putting acting on the back burner until like a good script comes along. That's what he said in recent interviews. So who knows what will happen.
I'm interested in seeing what he's going to do, but I thought he would have waited for the newer Star Wars movie to come out and then spoof that. So I have no idea where, if anything,
I'm glad he's doing it before
exactly. Like if they're planning to do Spaceball 2 correctly, I use correctly, like very loosely. Prequels, and then you wait for the next saga, I guess, to be over. And
I don't think you'll
Baseball
stream,
man.
It depends on how popular the second one becomes.
I guess. I mean, it's a cult movie.
Exactly.
Will it really, like, hit the teeters, hardcore, own ball run all the way?
Well, let's put it this way. His last movie that came out was The Producers, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
No. Was it The Producers? Was it The Producers or Dracula Dead or Loving It? Or I'm just mixing it up.
I'm pretty sure it's The Producers.
The newest one.
Because he's been working on the musical.
There's the newer version of The Producers. That came with Uma Thurman.
Yeah, no, that's his last movie.
Yeah.
All right, so essentially, I'm like cautiously optimistic. It can be interesting. It could be very bad. But
I'm just wondering, sort of why?
But he's bored, and he's been working on The Producers for like the last few years.
Yeah, like,
all right, I guess.
Because people like remakes. They're remaking Ghostbusters, so they might as well just redo.
Well, no, it's a sequel, so
yeah,
it's continuing.
Also it was Ghostbusters.
All right, so moving on. It turns out that Netflix is in talks to develop a Legend of Zelda series for Netflix.
I'm gonna raise a good question here. Like, let's talk about a bit of like the Netflix schedule and like the shows they do. The only show that I really like from Netflix, their original series, is House of Cards. I tried Marco Polo.
It's so good.
It tried so hard to be Game of Thrones.
It doesn't matter.
It just kind of.
So
I don't know.
You're wrong. You don't understand the intricacies of throwing ballistas at walls.
Xavier,
you didn't like BoJack Horseman?
What about?
I kind of don't care about it. That's the problem.
Orange is the New Black is the Netflix original.
Yeah.
It's okay, but you have to be in a certain mood to watch it. It's pretty weird.
So it's like Oz?
It's not as good as Oz, but that's coming from a gay man, so I can't.
But I don't know, man. And Legend of Zelda, like, there have been talks about, like, live-action movies for, like, I don't know how many years, and
I'm only excited if he says, excuse me, princess.
That's what I was going to say. I hope it's just like the cartoon. So excuse me, princess!
So you want Steve Martin to play him?
Why not?
Steve Martin is line. That's where they're pulling from.
As long as there's someone Steve Martin-esque. Who cares? I'm saying, if they're going to do something like this, if they're going to go all fantasy with it, there's definitely not going to be a budget for it, and it's just going to come out crappy. And if they're going to do something with this, go kind of parodical of it.
Make it a parody more so.
Be more
put
fun
Xander in that.
Yes.
I think they might have the budget,
though.
I think
Netflix has so much money.
Oh, no, yes. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they're bankrupt because they're making all these shows.
Yeah, exactly.
But it depends on what Nintendo's willing to... Because remember, Nintendo also has to probably chip in some money as well, and Nintendo's probably not going to put that much in.
Or they don't have to. Look at all those Capcom movies.
He does have a point, though. The show could sell a lot because it's Legend of Zelda.
I don't know if you guys remember a few years ago, they actually had... Someone did like a trailer to a fake Zelda movie, and it was actually done very well, surprisingly.
True.
But for me, I'm looking forward to...
I'm not looking
forward to it. I just want it to be more so like Legend, Ridley Scott's Legend from the 80s. Because that, to me, seems like the closest... Yes. It seems like the closest thing you'll get to a Zelda movie, to be honest, in my opinion.
Except I don't want Tom Cruise in it.
Well, he doesn't even speak. He barely speaks in that movie.
Tom Cruise as the moon!
You just have to have that devil guy. You have to get the same guy. What's his name?
Oh, I mean, Tim Curry.
Tim Curry. You have Tim Curry as Ganondorf.
I could work. I can see Tim Curry doing good than Ganondorf.
He's freaky as fuck.
So, yay or nay, we're all for this?
Yeah.
Dave Bautista as Ganondorf.
Let's see what they do. Let's see what they got.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. Well, last thing on our list for the news is the Netflix Daredevil trailer finally was released. And I'm actually, I think it looks pretty good. It looks dark. It looks pretty cool. I'm actually excited to see this.
You know what's one thing I don't care about? Superheroes TV shows.
I like superhero TV shows, but like I watched the trailer and I can't remember anything about it, so I feel like it didn't leave any lasting impressions.
Well, it's still a TV show.
It was super short.
I felt it left a good impression. Like, I'm not super into Daredevil, but I do know that he's a very religious guy. He's a, what was he again, Peter? He's a
lawyer.
He's Catholic. So
getting straight to the point.
He's Catholic, so at the beginning he's asking Father for forgiveness for his sins because that's repentance. That's all we do as Catholic people is please forgive us for whatever.
You seem to know a lot about this stuff.
I am Catholic.
Well, let's put it this way. It's not going to be the Daredevil movie. As much as a guilty pleasure, but it's not a bad movie.
There's good and bad parts about it.
That movie brought us Elektra, so it can never be forgiven.
Elektra was coming either way. It didn't matter.
Jennifer Garner.
So there was that.
Alias.
There's going to be Styx, which the Daredevil movie didn't have, which is the guy that teaches him how to fight with his two sticks. And there was one thing that all the other shows, one, and the movies don't have, and that's blood. There's a scene where he's pulling himself off the floor and he's like bleeding blood from his mouth because he got punched so hard. And this show is going to be like a very hard PG-13, like, a little bit more rough around the edges.
I'm guessing more of like a R-rated show.
Yeah.
I'd be excited if they announced like a Ghost Rider TV show.
That's not in Marvel's hands.
It's not going to happen, but I would be excited for it.
It's because it's not in actual Marvel Studios' hands.
Yeah.
Right, so
is Daredevil?
Yes, they got that back.
Daredevil got it back to Marvel.
So they have rights to the characters.
It was Daredevil, Punisher, and I think it was Ghost Rider too, because they didn't make money off of the Ghost Rider movies. So
they didn't make money out of the second one, that's for sure.
So, and that was, I think, the better one, if I'm not mistaken.
Both of them were pretty bad. I mean, the only good thing about the second movie I can recall is that at least they let Nicolas Cage go crazy with the role.
But back to Daredevil in this trailer.
I'm excited.
I'm
screaming at the door.
I'm excited about it also.
I like superhero movies and TV shows, so I'll watch it, but I right now don't have
cautious.
I'm really kind of just meh.
Like me.
Daredevil's just the movie killed it. The few times that I was
introduced
to it from it when I was as a kid through like Spider-Man and all this stuff, not really through the comic books. It was always like, okay.
I'm just like, there's so many superhero shows out right now. I'm worried that this is just jumping on the bandwagon to get.
There's a lot of movies, a lot of TV shows. Like, it's a craze right now.
That's just it. There's so many, and this one's sort of late to the party, so I hope they do either something super amazing, and if it's just jumping on the bandwagon because they're like, oh, we got this character, whatever.
They're sticking to the actual, just the character as a character, and that's their whole thing.
Because this show is supposed to be the gateway into, like, street-level superheroes in the Marvel Universe, so they are going to tie it, like, I think they're going to
It ties into the MCU.
It's one of the superhero you can actually do as a TV show, because it doesn't need, like, a high budget to make it, like, things happen.
I think Punisher would have been better for
Red Light.
But Punisher. Like, you don't mean
Punisher's
Punisher could work too.
I would say Punisher's a hard sell because they've done two Punisher movies. I mean, it would work really bad, and they've done a million other Punisher movies with Denzel Washington. Devils have done way better. Man on Fire, Equalizer. Like, I'm being dead serious. As long as you don't call him Punisher, he does well. But if they put that Punisher thing, a kiss of death.
Punisher would work in terms of like the context of like city and crime, but I don't know if they could put it off.
Yeah,
and like even if people care about it,
I would say if he I could see Punisher popping up here and there in the so it's Daredevil, and then it's going to be
AKA Jessica Jones,
and then Power Man, which is Luke Cage.
And then
Iron Fist. I could see him popping up.
Yeah, and then
all of them together is the Defenders. I could see him Punisher popping up here and there, here and there, here and there, here and there.
It's not this one I'm worried about. It's the Luke Cage and the Iron Fist shows. So
I would hope. I just want to see what they do for Iron Fist's costume because that shit will fly no more.
Luke Cage or Iron Fist? Which one?
The green one with the yellow bandana over his eyes.
Is the most normal outfit.
We'll never work again.
Think about it this way. Isn't Iron Fist's story? He's a white guy that's like the chosen one for this Chinese culture or something.
We saw that movie, The Chosen One. No, where the white guy that was played by that guy.
Oh, are you talking about the Iron Monk one?
Where he got the scroll and Ryan he was the Reynolds. Chosen, right? Yeah.
Don't you mean Bulletproof?
Bulletproof. There we go.
And that wasn't Ryan Reynolds. That was Sean something.
Whatever. Oh, Sean William Scott.
Yeah, it was Stifler.
Yeah. White guy, chosen guy. There you go. You got the movie already. Not working.
Okay. Is there any quick news anyone would like to bring up?
Nope.
Awesome. Okay, so join us in our next segment where we'll be geeking around.
Hey, this is Anthony Bowling, voices of such characters as Yuka in Fairy Tail, Ukyo in Samurai 7, and Alciel in The Devil is a Part-Timer, along with many, many more. And right now you are listening to Geeking Out at the Tower Podcast.
And we're back, and this is the Geeking Around segment where we talk about things geeky and otherwise going around in the geekosphere. So what I've been doing recently is that the first episode of Power Rangers Dino Charge came out, and it's great because the last few seasons, Power Rangers Samurai and Power Rangers Megaforce, have been not the best seasons. They actually haven't been that good at all. It's just that Power Rangers Dino Charge feels like old Power Rangers again. It feels like
Mighty Morphin, I would have.
Not exactly Mighty Morphin, but like how it got better as time went on. It has the same feel because yes, dinosaurs are back, but it also has better written characters from like the later seasons that we got in some of the seasons, because some seasons we got pretty bad characters. Don't get me wrong. You spend the first 8 to 10 minutes without actually seeing a single one of the first main cast. And it's just the enemies setting up world building, backstory. It's really fun, actually. I'm just really glad it's back. I'll probably be talking about it in a future episode, but with other people. But you know what? If you fell off the Power Rangers train and you're looking to get back, I think this might be the season that people should come back on.
How are the putties? Do they go woo?
We didn't see any of the foot soldiers in this one, but they've been using less and less foot soldiers as they've gone along in some seasons. And this season's more about the actual villains and not like the mooks just going in and rushing. But there are some cool things with the mooks, like they combine together to grow bigger. That's from seeing the Sentai footage.
So basically,
I just like that it's like still unoriginal because it's like, okay, we're gonna go back to dinosaurs now. It's like,
Well, that's all based on the Japanese footage that they get. And actually, this season is pretty original. There's 10 Rangers. At the end of the day, so there's gonna be 10.
Wow. Rainbow Ranger.
Turquoise Ranger.
Actually, when you
cyan.
Actually, it is cyan. There is actually a cyan.
Magenta.
Crimson.
No, it's purple.
Kevin. Get your Power Ranger.
It actually doesn't do the whole rainbow thing, which is what I find hilarious. But it does. There's like several blues, several.
Because nobody wanted to be the Brown Ranger.
Oh.
No, that was in Samurai.
Are we talking about Reservoir Dog or Power Rangers now?
Like with some of the villains, they're like doing, I guess, a Goldar kind of thing where they kind of build up two characters together, like having a rivalry and stuff like that.
Mostly the villains are friendly antagonists to each other. Like it's a friendly rivalry. They're all aiming for the same goal, but they're all trying to do it better than the rest. At least in the Sentai footage. We haven't really seen the new enemies interact with the new Rangers. Rangers, and in the first episode, only two of them get their powers, and we haven't even seen one of the five yet entirely, so I'm really looking forward to it. It was like a two-parter, but not shortened into one. It was like a two-parter, but they only showed the first part, so we'll see what happens there.
Probably I'll check out that Power Rangers show later on this year, for sure.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely have some updates as it comes along, so... As it goes along, sorry.
Keep us in touch, Andrew.
You know I will. Peter, what have you been up to?
Pretty much I've been watching The Walking Dead and Better Call Saul yesterday. I pretty much marathoned The Walking Dead because AMC had a marathon this whole past week.
So the entire show?
Second half of season five kicked off last night, which was a pretty interesting episode, I have to say. And any comments about that? Or is anyone else watching Walking Dead?
I wish I could care about the TV show The Walking Dead, but I can't.
Did they actually have Carl rap? Because that Carl rap segment was great.
No, Carl wasn't rapping.
Worst episode. Was Robert Kirkman on being really silly and awesome as he usually is?
He wasn't on Talking Dead. It was pretty much one of the directors.
Okay.
Ooh. And also, I checked out the Better Call Saul. Very interesting start to the series. Quite enjoyed it quite well.
That's the thing I need to check out, though, the first episode of that.
Yeah, a lot of people have gone on IMDb and just gave it 10 out of 10 already after one episode.
Because it's amazing! Quite funny.
Is it very comedic?
It's a perfect balance between comedy and drama, I feel.
Like Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Like early Breaking Bad, because the first season, there was a lot of comedy moments, but then after season two, it just went straight drama.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
There were still funny moments, and what the pizza throw is in, like, in the third season, I can't recall.
That was an accident, and they kept it in, because it
worked. No, that was not an accident. They were planning to do that shot, but they never thought it would land in on the first take.
Oh, really?
He took it on the... No, Brian Christen just took the pizza, landed on first shot, done. They have to, like, throw another pizza on the roof. That's the joke.
Oh, I thought the joke was that he wasn't even going to throw the pizza. He just did it randomly. And they're like, well, that works.
That was planned, but they didn't plan on him to land it on the first shot.
Oh, wow. Well, that's Bryan Cranston for you. He can do everything.
I really need to catch up on Breaking Bad, but one thing I really hope for Better Call Saul is that it's...
Better Off with our
Better Call Saul.
Is that his henchmen or his bodyguard? The two guys.
Black Kevin?
The big black guy.
You mean the better Kevin.
and Bill Burr. Because I know those two guys as comedians, something Levert and Bill Burr. So I'm hoping they'll be around.
Yeah, well, they were pretty good in Breaking
Bad. I know, it's a prequel, so it's very likely
it's kind of a prequel spin-off, but they hint at some stuff that happens in the future also.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Just to bring up The Walking Dead, I'm so sick of zombies everything. So much zombies in video games.
Zombies are better than sparkling vampires.
Granted. Yeah. However, so if they just don't have sparkling vampires,
yeah. Let's be honest. Sparkling vampires was a one shot deal of Twilight. We have like an overdose of zombies.
You have not been watching my friend TV recently, then Hemlock Grove, pretty much a sparkling vampire. Really? There was Vampire Diaries. Those vampires were pretty sparkly too.
Not True actually. Blood.
He's right with Vampire Diaries. I actually forgot about that. But really, Hemlock Grove.
The
vampires are pretty good in Hemlock Grove. Vampires
nowadays.
One of them is like super good vampire, and one of them is just like sparkling.
And again, I'm not really shitting on like The Walking Dead. It's just the only thing of The Walking Dead I really care about is like Telltale Game.
Yes.
That's the thing I care about the most, because even the comic, I can't like it. I don't like the crew.
Carl's in it and no one likes Carl.
No, it's more than that. It's just there's a lot of people I just don't like in The Walking Dead, and
I'll just put it this way, the zombies thing isn't on its way out per se, but is tapering off.
There's a movie coming out around 2016 or 2017. It's called Zombies Against Robots, so the zombie craze is not done yet.
Yeah, well, you had zombies against Nazis, zombies against Russians,
zombies in the snow, zombies on the moon.
Yeah, exactly. zombies can do anything. I'm waiting for Zombie NATO.
Zombies and zombies.
Alright, so...
I'll put my zombie.
Oh, wait! I had Zombie NATO because that was in Z Nation.
Zombie Beaver.
Oh, God.
I've been starting a new game called Luminous Arc 2 on the DS. Yes, it's an old game, but pretty much it's another JRPG that plays out like a tactical RPG game, and it plays out pretty much like an anime.
Yeah. It's a harem anime strategy tactics RPG.
So, like, I was playing it at first, like, oh, come on, just get to the point. I want to get into the battles. And I started reading, and I was like, okay, you're rooting me over. Okay, fine.
How many turns? turns, can you land on this girl's crouch?
No, nothing that bad.
It's more like how many times she lands on you.
Oh, okay. It's played fairly straight as far as like harems go.
Okay.
But it's not like, the second one's a bit more in your face about it. The first one I think is the better balance with story and harem and strategy elements. The second one gets a bit more involved in its story. But otherwise, it's actually a very solid strategy game at the get-go.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that even if you're a bit iffy on harems, the game itself is still very solid.
Is it a Bowie game?
No, it's your early, it's like your early harems. It's like your Love Hinas, your Tenchi Muyos. So there is a Moe character by definition.
But there's not a lot of.
But it's not like there's not a bunch of like there's not like five little girls.
Yeah.
There's the one little sister character. There's all your types, like your little sister character, the big boob chick who's very not slutty but sexual. Mm-hmm. There's your childhood friend. There's the other girl that likes you. Mm-hmm. All kinds of things like that.
And they're all basically just like your age. It's not even like they're crazy young or anything like that.
So
it's not bad. Mm-hmm. And I also checked out the Grammys this past Sunday. So, you know, lots of stuff happened. People are creating controversies that aren't even there. But one of the performances I kind of liked was Sia. She did Chandeliers. So she had the girl from her music video in it. And also Christian Wiig was playing like the same kind of girl. So they were both dancing around this like kind of dilapidated room and stuff like that.
That's a good music video, by the way.
Yeah. And there was also a third girl on the scene with them, but her face was kind of facing the wall.
That might have been Sia.
And that was probably Sia because she has a very big
booty.
No. She has a very big
good job, Andrew.
Yeah.
Well, you said facing a.
No, she's facing the wall, but like her. She's wearing like a long coat, but you're kind of seeing her legs. She has anxiety. That's what I was trying to say.
Oh, I was gonna say, can you really blame me? He's black.
No,
from behind the booty.
I was trying to say she has performance anxiety, so I was trying to figure out who this girl was. Facing
no, she
the
just
wall.
Doesn't like to show her face.
And you're racist, apparently.
And
apparently. From one brother to another.
Okay, there you go. That's how it works.
He's just racist.
And even when she was there for no, like, they were presenting the award, her picture of her in the crowd was just like a black screen and then like her like blonde wig on top of that black screen. So like you didn't even see her face or anything.
God damn.
That was the biggest highlight. And I was surprised that Kristen Wiig was there. She did pretty well. And
she's classically trained.
Yeah, she was pirouetting like crazy. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, she's a classically trained dancer.
I had no idea. But the other girl like brought it. Like she's like a backflip and stuff like that. So that was
Night of the Grammys, wasn't it?
That was one of the more memorable ones.
Don't forget about Kanye.
Yeah, that's what I said. But like I said, people are trying to create a controversy where there isn't really.
His interview was pretty straightforward.
His interview was straightforward.
Yeah, if you're going to keep saying Beyonce's not winning, we're just not going to come to your awards anymore. That's pretty straightforward.
Well,
give us the award or too bad.
Jay-Z
already won it the last time.
Jay-Z already shunned the Grammys before, so it's not even that. It's not like they've never done it. Mm-hmm. And plus, they're always performing, so it's not like they're not going to go.
What he said.
Let's put it this way. They're making millions anyway, so what do they care if the Grammys acknowledge them?
And also, like when Beck won his award for Best Album of the Year, Kanye went jokingly up to like kind of mimic what he did in the VMAs with Taylor Swift, and then like he went back down, and then like Beck was pretending like to smack him down, and Kanye went back down, and he's like, no, come back up, and so they actually got Beck to quote on it, and he said, you know what, I would hope to be as good as Kanye, and this was just as big a surprise to me to anybody else, so I'm very happy to get it. But
well, haven't they collaborated before, Beck and Kanye?
Not to my knowledge. Okay. I don't think so. And on the flip side, someone did point out something really funny. They said Beck plays probably about 14 different instruments, and Beyonce's song took two people to write it. So
I thought the quote was four people.
No, I think it was two or four.
Four like, people to quote.
It's however you're looking at it. So it's not even, like I said, it's not even a big deal. Everyone was fair, like taking it with a grain of salt.
Kevin, what have you been up to?
Wendell mentioned the Highlander anime movie a while back. I finally watched it.
Why?
It's not great. It has action, but it forces so much of the like Highlander-ness into it, but then it's like it's dated in the future and it's just like, eh.
Is this a continuation of like the Highlander TV cartoon show where like
No, it's not.
The redheaded guy?
For the second time.
I'm gonna put it this way. Is it the original? Quoting the original Highlander. I think it's the original. There can only be one.
Yes, they also quoted that as well.
Now,
that should probably how it would have been.
As a counterpoint, have you seen the second Highlander movie or Highlander Endgame, which was the third movie?
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. Endgame was horrendous.
Wait, is Endgame
was
like
the fourth one?
It was the fourth one?
Is that the one where... No, okay, the third one...
The third one was the Sorcerer.
Sorcerer with Mario Van Peebles.
Oh, man. So wait, which is the one where they basically collide both the TV show and the movie universe?
That was the fourth?
That was Endgame.
Endgame? So there's a fifth movie where they actually do the quickening, or the real thing.
The Highlander franchise is a mess. That's about it.
Yeah,
honestly, you should have just stopped at the first one.
I like the live action TV shows, both of them. Raven and the other one with Duncan McLeod.
Raven? You like Raven?
Yeah.
All things considered, it wasn't such a bad series. Especially if you put it beside this movie. This anime movie, literally, they kind of explain this character's kind of like involvement with the McLeod clan and all that. So it's like, okay, it makes sense. But afterwards, it goes to the future and it's like, what's going on? And like the whole premise of the movie is this guy never wins. And he just survives out of the skin of his teeth. And
Love it when stories does that.
And then like automatically at the end, he's just like, well, now he's strong enough. And I'm like,
because he finally
he trained.
And it's like,
rough arm enough to beat the head boss.
Basically. So it had its action. It was interesting. You had that one love scene, whoop-de-doo. But it wasn't fantastic. I'm glad I got to see it just to get like an idea of it. But it was like no more than that. It was it was like, okay, what? Like half the time I was just pointing at the screen and be like, no.
Is it a good terrible watch or it's just terrible?
If you like that sort of style from manga entertainment at the time,
isn't it Madhouse?
No,
I forgot the name of the director.
Kawajiri.
Yeah, Kawajiri. So if you like the style of Ninja Scroll, Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust.
Yeah, you'll most likely like this movie.
That's why I like
it. But otherwise...
I still like the story regardless.
The story's just terrible.
I think it's Highlander 1. If it was movies, Highlander 1, and then this, and then everything else can go at the bottom. Mm. And remember, I said movies. I did not say TV shows. There are a separate category.
I was keeping most, sir.
And then my sister comes... I brought up Zathura as a movie. It was brought up before because the idea I wanted to have is to have an episode where we could talk about the differences between Jumanji and Zathura. Nobody's interested in watching Zathura, even though nobody's even watched it, or very few people have. Neither have I, and my sister had just said, oh, I have this movie, actually. And I was like, oh, I'll actually watch it, just because I've never seen it. It's not a bad movie. It's not the greatest movie, but comparing it to Jumanji, it's a lot better. The story was a lot better. The kind of like how the whole house plays as like a whole part of this whole adventure with this board game, I'm surprised. It was really good, especially since this was 10 years after Jumanji. Holy crap, I really expected bottom of the barrel bullshit, and I was extremely surprised at how well it was.
I remember watching that movie when it came out in theater. I remember liking it, but I was very young. Mm-hmm. I'd be curious to like revisit it again. At the same time, I'm like, it's kind of a treasure child of memory. I'm like, do I want to destroy it and watch it again? And I kind of don't want to step that boundary. I can say, safety people, and say, I can recommend it to your kids. It's a pretty great movie. It's got a little bit of edge to it. It's nothing big or dramatic. It's just, it's a fun movie.
Yeah, I would. And I like the how like it pulls the whole like 1950s sci-fi, yeah, like from like Flash Gordon type of thing. So like they open the door, they're in space, they're not dying of lack of air, but it's like, oh, well, back in the days, that's how it was. So that's what was happening.
Yeah.
So no, it was, I'm surprised how much I did enjoy it. And yeah, that's about it.
A good side note about Zathura. So the director is Jon Favreau.
Yep.
And so when they announced that he was going to direct Iron Man, a lot of people were very scared because they're like, wait, wasn't his last movie Zathura? I don't know. And then he really, really showed us.
Like, I mean, not only Zathura, like, it just wasn't this kind of movie, Iron Man. Like, what he did before, I got title wrong, Swing Kids?
Swingers?
Swingers. Yeah, like, those are like the movies we associate with Jon Favreau, not like big blockbuster Hollywood movie. But he really did show us that he could do it with Iron Man 1. Iron Man 2, you know.
I don't think it was his fault for Iron Man 2. No. They really came in and said, hey, Avengers, do it.
And I'm going to say something like maybe shocking to some people, but I think that Iron Man 2 movie is a better movie than Iron Man 3.
Debatable.
It's highly debatable.
I'm not saying one is better than the other, but I do like them both. I actually do enjoy
to some levels.
Yeah.
Like, Iron Man 3 really pissed me off.
I like Iron Man 3 because it shows that I don't need the suit to be Iron Man.
Sure, yeah. I get that mentality. Yeah.
You didn't like House Party Protocol? Or the Fireworks Protocol? I forgot what he does when he explodes all the suits.
Like, exploding all the suits. Wasn't there one holding, like, the crane? Whoops.
I think that's supposed to be the Space Buster, or the Space Suit. Anyway, he's gonna make a whole bunch more anyway.
We saw the Avengers 2 trailer, but yeah. You got anything more to say, Kevin?
Nope, that's about it.
I've been watching Top Gear because season 22 has started. I'm gonna say it. UK version, not that American.
Does that still exist?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, the UK one is still a thing.
Yeah, but
no, the UK one's strong.
I know the UK one is strong.
So after a 1 year break, because they usually do two seasons a year, like they only did one season last year, six episodes, they're coming out strong with this one with 10 episodes.
Oh,
and I'm really excited. Yeah, 10 episodes for series 22. And I mean, it's been off to a great start. And the last episode that aired yesterday was an ambulance episode. And kind of like where you were with the man with a van challenge. Oh. This is where like they take like really cheap cars and they turn into something horribly stupid. Oh. And it's amazing. Like, it's really bad. Richard Hammond makes an ambulance out of an old Ventura Chevy from like the 80s that has radioactive plasters all over it so people will get out of the way. It's super great. Go watch it. And some of the things are going to be interesting this season. They announced Richard Hammond being dumped in British Columbia, actually, on top of a mountain in Canada, surviving, pulling a string on his watch that will call James and Jeremy to rescue him in Canada while he's living Bear Grylls style in the mountain.
That's so he's kind of cheesy.
That's going to be the greatest.
So he's dead already.
Oh, yeah.
He's already so dead. He's straight up dead.
Straight up dead.
Did they they did a trailer in Lego, if I'm not mistaken, for this?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, right? They did a Lego trailer.
I saw that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, Richard Hammond just being stuck on every brick possible.
So who's the best driver so far, celebrity driver?
The one that got in, I can't remember his name, the new Red Bull driver with Vettel.
Oh.
See
the new one who's replacing Mark Webber.
Crap. I haven't kept
this guy, he came out yesterday. He's don't mind spoiling, he beat everyone with the Liana. He's now on top of the F1 board. And he beat everyone that had the Lacetti, the Kia Ceed, and the Astra. He's officially now the fastest man ever went on Top Gear.
So they let him drive all of them, basically? Or?
No. He beat the ones that had the Liana.
Yeah, yeah.
The Lacetti,
mm-hmm.
the Ceed. And the Astra, which are both... All those cars are more powerful than the Liana.
Oh, okay.
And he beat all of those people with the Liana. Guy was amazingly fast. I couldn't, like, that was brutal. Yeah. And speaking of American Top Gear, they're doing a crossover with Top Gear UK this season.
Yeah, well, they have to.
Yeah, they're gonna make, you know what they did with the Top Gear Australia a while back, like the Ashes Reborn.
So they're just gonna make fun of them the whole time?
Yep.
Because, I mean...
Great episode.
I don't mind the American Top Gear, but the big difference between the two is that Top Gear
is funny.
No. Is that Top Gear, like you said, season 20, what? 22. So these guys have been technically kind of...
Okay, well, I'm going to put it this way. You're right.
And they also have the BBC's money.
If you go back to the first season of Top Gear, sure, the original Top Gear UK, like you can watch it again and you're like, no, not the original program, the reborn Top Gear of 2002.
Yes, okay.
Which is, you know, you watch that first season and you're like, okay, I see that it's rough around the edges. Like, James May was not around at that time. They had this other guy. Yeah. And it's not fantastic, but if you compare the first season of Top Gear US to Top Gear UK, and you consider, like, the evolution of the thing, Top Gear UK had a much better, start. And Top Gear US just didn't improve. That's the thing that Top Gear Australia managed to do. Like, they started off kind of weak, but they eventually managed to pull their own show in. Mm-hmm. But US just can't do it. The problem is their trios are just not funny. They don't got any charisma together. That's the thing that Top Gear UK works. It's not because it's about cars.
Mm.
It's about true three middle-aged men falling over on the ground, people laughing.
Oh, no, that's pranking each other.
And they're like, pranking each other, they're making fun of each other and insulting each other all the time. Mm-hmm. That's why it's sort of great, and it feels natural. Mm. It feels like they really hate each other, but they really love each other. US, it just feels like they pull three people in the room, you're like, read the script, alright, tell him he's a dick. Like, it just doesn't feel great. It doesn't feel like a good TV show.
You didn't say it with enough oomph. Say dick!
You're dick!
I feel that they need just a smidge more time.
And they need to stop trying to copy Top Gear UK. They could become their own show. Like I said, Australia did that. I'm gonna keep you guys updated just, you know, privately. On the next episode, when the episode of Canada comes in, and that'll be interesting to watch. I mean, it's gonna be really ridiculous.
Awesome. Fifth year for life.
Right, they burned down the studio.
Alright. Keith, I went on Netflix to find out something I could watch to pass the time, and I ended up watching Batman Year One because you guys told me
the
other Justice League one was shit.
Well, also Batman Year One just came out in Netflix Canada.
Yeah. Oh, okay, really?
Yeah, it only just ended up on Netflix.
I know I've seen it, but like,
it shows on Teletoon
before
all the time.
Netflix.
It shows on Teletoon all the time.
Like what?
Yeah, I don't watch Teletoon.
Oh, cable network. Oh, no.
I mean, it was a good Batman movie. I found it a little slow, but I liked it.
It's the style.
Style-wise, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's the style. Like, slow pace a bit, yeah.
But it was good. It was a good hour. I would recommend it if you have an hour to waste.
Yeah, it's a short. It's one of the shorter.
Hour and 15 minutes or something.
Man, it's not a rough watch after that. After all, like, it's just a...
It was an easy watch. Not much to say about it.
I can't remember, but maybe someone can confirm. I believe the voice actor for Batman in Year One is now Gordon in Gotham. So that's why I like that when I heard that he was playing Gordon, and I'm like, yeah, no, he's already like
in the DC
limelight. So it's really
he's a better voice actor than he is an actual actor. But also bringing back the Bryan Cranston angle. Bryan Cranston plays Commissioner Gordon in this one.
Yeah, that's funny.
Sorry, not Commissioner. Yeah,
just Gordon.
Jim Gordon.
I like the take on Gordon where it was like it was showing him trying to decide where he should stand with Batman. Like, is Batman a good guy, a bad guy? Should he do his job? Should he not? I found that more interesting than just Batman's like, I'm rich, I'm coming to the city to kick some ass.
But I like also, like, in this movie, too, it shows Gordon very, like, dealing with human aspects of life. Like, he kind of falls in love with another woman while being married, and there's a bit of that being dealt with. So, like, I really like the full human side of it, where it's...
Like, the human drama part of it.
Yeah, because it does involve... It gets used as, like, a means to try to, like, deal with Gordon and be like, oh, well, we know about this, and it's like...
Depending on who's writing it, like, Batman's going to predict... pretty good human drama depending on the writer you put for like those kinds of stories. Most of the time it works,
and that's exactly it. I like that they can go with the story in that direction as opposed to just be like, look, I've got superpower, bing bam boom. It's like, yeah, okay, that's entertaining if you're like an action thing, but if you really want a strong story, no, I think if you can get the characters to really work with it.
Yep.
And it shows like Batman learning, like,
yeah,
he's like, oh man, he screws up a couple of times. He's like, shit, man, just dumb. Yeah. Why did I do that?
I remember that was one of the stories used for a basis for Batman Begins, basically. So, like, you see some of the parallels where, like, he's trying to use the spelunking equipment and he slams against the wall, like, oh.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And the other thing I did this weekend was I checked out the, I guess it's called the Toy Expo?
Retro Expo.
Put on Sunday. It was done by our friend Proto Man. He's planning to do another one. It was super interesting. Had a lot of good vendors there with a lot of interesting things.
But
it was a small room, and I think it's really like your first time doing it. You don't exactly know how many people are going to show up. I mean, Facebook said 800 people were coming. He announced that over 1,100 people showed up. Holy and like, it was a tiny room. It was a tight fit.
Yeah.
And like, there was a couple of times where I just left the room to go
get some
sit on the side and get some air with my friends because I was like, I can't deal with this. I saw a lot of people with backpacks turning around, hitting people in the faces.
Kids getting elbowed.
I heard about kids getting elbowed.
I heard about one kid getting
elbowed. My friend who had a backpack was like, I'm never bringing a backpack to these things again. A lot of good vendors. There was quite some interesting stuff. I didn't buy anything, but there was Transformers, there was Magic Cards, there was Ninja Turtles, there was anime.
I mean, Retro Slumber craze got really filled up.
One person was selling a Shulk Amiibo for $80, and that's unforgivable.
That's actually standard price.
What?
A Shulk Amiibo.
Oh, yeah, it is kind of standard
price. Actually, that same. They were willing to make good deals.
I saw people bargaining. I saw some other people that just were like, oh my god, you have this thing, I must get it.
Yeah.
And, like, the few people I talked to, like, I was like, I don't know what this is from. They were super happy to explain what the toy is from, where it was things. Like, all the vendors seemed really, like, not big box store, but actual, like, collectors that were super interested in the stuff they had. Mm-hmm. And they were happy to, like, give a person a deal if they thought they
wanted
it.
Where was the venue at?
Hotel Ruby Foos, yeah. Which is free parking and right next to a metro, a block away from a metro, so...
And a bunch of restaurants.
And a bunch of restaurants, so...
Wendy's, a good location. Baby!
Yeah, there was Wendy's, there was a McDonald's, there was Baton Rouge, there was Amir's, and there was Dunn's, which is smoked meat. If you're in Montreal, you know what that is.
Yeah. Me, Xavier, Wendell also went.
I was a vendor.
Wendell was a vendor. I went. I guess it was a small room, even when...
I stayed for like an hour, and then I...
I mean, I would have stayed longer, but at least the hallways were larger.
I mean, I did like, though, what we got, and like I said, like, we had some pretty great vendors. I thought, like, the merchant was pretty strong.
Yes.
For like hence the name Retro, but like they really had some pretty great stuff, and I ended up buying two things, and so
I was good. I had my eye on a few things. Unfortunately, I had to leave early, so I didn't actually come back and get some of them. Yeah, honestly, the variety of things, there were things there I didn't even expect to see.
A lot of G.I. Joe, like, really obscure.
Oh, not even. It was the Gao Gaigar.
No, but I mean also G.I. Joe.
Oh,
like,
no, I thought it was the He-Man stuff that took the show.
Man.
Oh, yeah, that's the new, I think, what's up?
Hordak!
I forgot the name of Bryce Gold.
I forgot the name of the newer He-Man stuff, but yeah, there's like the bigger...
There was a screen in the corner that was playing it, and I was like, what is that? And then I saw Evil Wind, I was like, is that a new He-Man? How did I miss this?
Come watch the new show.
Skeletor!
Any other quick thoughts on the show?
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
You were behind the table having some fun times.
Well, no, I was selling stuff, but I was also like, if people asked questions, I would point them in the right person of some of the vendors, because I know a few of the guys, and I know people that know other people that would get them the toys they would want. And one thing I really liked was that a lot of people that I knew throughout the years that are also geeks, they came out and I got to see them and talk to them. And I actually had a lot of fun, and people were pretty nice and pretty friendly, and they weren't, there was no big fights or arguments breaking out anywhere. So
I was also surprised how many people showed up, considering I saw like practically no advertisement.
It was all on like Facebook.
Facebook. There was one thing on MTL blog. Yeah, it was word of mouth, MTL blog, some of the venue runners, like, they would be at a show at a bar, and then they would be talking to some girls and gave them a flyer.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they were like, oh, we know guys that are really into this stuff. And so, like, yeah, basically word of mouth.
The only problem with the MTL blog was apparently they just took a generic photo, and some people were unhappy about, like, they're like, we thought there was going to be a bunch of stuff because of this photo. And he was like, we didn't give them the photo.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? They didn't even know they were writing the article?
No, not at all.
No, they just came out with the photo of, like, things, and, like, they, like, highlighted some things, and then, like, it wasn't at the show. It was like, tons of Sailor Moon stuff, and like they had like one booth with like a couple of pieces, you know.
Well, yeah. The figure arts.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It was figure arts, and I think there might have been a little plushie.
If you went like there's so many boxes that you could dig through, that there's some crazy things,
yeah,
including a super cool ET plushie.
Oh, there was so much girls were going crazy over the plushies. That was amazing.
I thought you were gonna say so many girls going crazy over the ET plushie. I'm like,
I saw people just picking up the plushie, like, oh my goodness, this ET plushie.
Yeah. Also some cool cosplays.
Well, there's a summer edition coming up, so if you're in Montreal around that time, you guys should probably definitely check it out.
I'll go buy more Transformers.
I'll probably pick up another thing if I see it again.
I'll actually show up.
One thing to point out, there was a snowstorm going on.
Oh, yeah, it was a blizzard.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty bad.
The fact that there was 1,100 people that did show up.
That's really
someone
good.
Did say, like, oh, better, like, next carpets. next time don't plan it during a snowstorm. It's like, how can you plan it when you planned it, like, a few, like, way months in advance.
Yeah. I think the location helped, because it was easy to park, so people wanted to take their cars. It was next to a metro, so you could take a metro. Yeah. And it wasn't, like...
And it was really close to the highway. That's also the
It was really good. And I also like that it wasn't downtown, so you didn't have just people walking by. People who went there wanted to go there. Mm-hmm. And I think that helped the vendors out, because it made, like, sure that...
And the price was right. $2.
Yeah. Free for kids.
Yeah, no, that's a perfectly good price. Like I said to my roommate, it could have been like a room with a chair. $2, that's fine.
Well, sounds like someone who understands.
A room and a chair, maybe not, but at least
$2?
They had it set up.
As long as there's great. Heating. Yeah. In the middle of a blizzard. Yeah, with a chair, $2, I'm down.
Well, that's right. Awesome. Any other quick news you'd like to bring up?
I forgot to bring something during my geeking out.
Unacceptable.
I'll make it quick. I finished Serial Experiment Lane.
Oh, okay.
I've actually watched that.
So, is it as messed up as I heard?
Yes. It's not messed
up. Thanks, Xavier.
How can I put it? Is it messed up?
I think it's like, for him.
I think it's really well thought, because there's a lot of stuff that connects throughout the story, and there's a lot of deeper meaning to, like, the symbolism that happens, and what some, like, even people's names sometimes are a bit, you know, they're sort of connecting. And I probably need a second watch to start, like, pulling even more threads together. Mm-hmm. But as it is, I can say it's a really dementia-looking show, like, real, straight up.
It's a mind fuck, not a visual fuck.
Yeah, a bit of visual fuck sometimes, but it's not that much. It's just
not Elfenlied.
Elfenlied's not a mind fuck. Elfenlied
is visual fuck.
No, it's just bad.
It's just boring.
Yeah. Elfenlied is just a fucking
Thank
bad
you.
Act. It's just a bad show. It's not even like Hilara bad. It's not
it's not.
It's not like, at least these girls are hot bad. It's just bad.
The only thing good about this Elfenlied is Nana burning paper.
The best thing about Elfenlied is, honestly, all you need to see from Elfenlied is the first few minutes, and then don't watch the rest of the show.
Maybe the soundtrack.
That's true.
That's it. Yeah, I mean, even the soundtrack sounded kind of weak to me.
So,
I mean, there's Georgina Kata in it. Bless his soul. I'd say, yeah, watch Serial Experiment Lane if you haven't seen it. It's a pretty... But be ready. This is... Pay attention.
So it's like a Ghost in the Shell. You kind of do need a second rewatch.
Oh, worse than Ghost in the Shell.
Okay, so you need like a second like, or third.
I mean, you really need to...
Pay attention?
Like Alan Turing said, are you paying attention?
So awesome. All right, and that's just a few of the things we've been geeking around this week. Join us in our next segment where we'll be doing a board game review of Betrayal at House on the Hill.
This is Austin St. John. I play Jason, the original Red Ranger from television's Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Right now, I am geeking out at the Tower Podcast. Check it out, man. It's Morphin time.
And we're back, and this is our first of two topics, and it'll be a board game review of the game Betrayal at House on the Hill. It's a game published by Avalon Hill and was designed by Bruce Glasgow. It supports up to 3 to 6 players, though optimal range is, I think, 4 players, 10 and up, though I would recommend playing it with slightly older...
More mature people.
Not super mature, but I figured, like, you know...
Look who's talking.
I would put it around, you know, like, it says 10 and up, yeah, smarter 10-year-olds, but I would say 13, 14. The setup is really quick. It takes 5 minutes or less to set up the game. It has about a 30-minute to 2-hour playing time, sometimes longer if everyone's playing it for the first time, so always account for that. It is a luck-based game. It's a good mix of luck and skill, because there is strategy involved.
Well, knowing what you're doing.
And it's also a cooperative game.
Semi-cooperative.
It's a cooperative game that turns...
Backstabbing game.
It's still technically a cooperative game, because even if one player is playing against the rest, there's still some cooperation going on. So, Keith, would you care to explain the rules to us?
Okay, so first thing you do is you choose which characters you want to play as. There are basically 12 characters, but there's 6 cards with dual sides, so you pick which character you want, and they have different stats. So speed, might, sanity, and knowledge. Then you go on to the first half of the game, because it's basically 2 halves of a game. The first half, you go around exploring the house. So you move your speed, you reveal tiles, you could get items, you could get omens, you could get events.
At this
Some
time,
of them you- are good. Some of them them are bad. In the first half, you cannot die, but your stats could be lowered or raised depending on which cards you get.
And this allows for the board game to be to be
explored, because the house starts off with just like three places to go, and then as you move, the house grows bigger.
The board is different each
time. So it adds to variance. Also, to add to variance, when you get an omen, you roll the dice equal to the number of players plus.
No, you roll six dice.
Roll six dice, and if it beats the omen count, then you're fine. And if it doesn't, it starts the second half of the game.
The haunt.
So that creates the variance, because the haunt is based on what you rolled and which room you were in.
The omen and the room. And there's a third.
No, it's just those two things. And then there's a book that tells you, okay, based on that thing, this is the haunt you're doing. So it changes. It allows you to play the game multiple times and not always having to play
50 scenarios.
Same games. Yes. And then once the haunt is revealed, you find out if there's a traitor or not. And the traitor doesn't always be the person that caused the haunt. It could be...
It's based on variance.
So it could be like the person whose birthday is closest, the person with the strongest might, or this. And then each one of those 50 choices has a different win condition or a lose condition. And then the game continues on from there.
Yes. Did you explain how someone becomes a traitor?
Well, based on the haunt, it tells you who the bad guy is, if there is a bad guy. Some of them are very strongly oriented so that the traitor wins. Some of them are more for like the team to win. And some of them are 50-50 who wins. And it's basically luck. Because some of them are, you have to find a bunch of items. Other than you have to hope that you pick the right character to have the enough knowledge or sanity to do all your roles.
Or might.
Or might or speed. And it makes for a very interesting game. The problem is, if you're unlucky and like an omen occurs, a haunt occurs before you've like revealed more than half the house, sometimes you just...
There's nothing you could do.
Because they, like, you have to find items in rooms that haven't been explored. Also, there's three levels, basement, upper, and ground. Basement floor is the worst floor. Almost everything kills you in that floor.
It's a haunted house. Of course the basement is the worst place.
Yeah. The ground floor is pretty safe, and the upper one is...
Depends.
There's generally more favorable.
Yeah.
The ground floor is where you get the most variance in good to bad. Basement is primarily bad, and the upper floors are primarily good.
The game, like I said, it could take half an hour, or it could take... There's some games that are so complicated, it just takes forever. Plus your playgroup. I mean, if you're a playgroup where you have to, like, discuss everything you're going to do before each person makes a move, just leave.
Well, that's any cooperative game, to be honest.
Just to give a few examples of what... haunt reveals that you can get. It could be as simple as someone becomes a werewolf or someone becomes a vampire. Others are a little bit more complicated. Like
there are ghosts that want to escape.
What was the one you got?
I was just a sleeping guy and I had six. I had to escape. I made six ghosts and I had to escape for every open window there was in the entire house. And if there was more open windows than like players, because I only had six of them, then when one escaped, I respawned a new ghost until I got there.
Oh.
But I mean, it's easier if I just killed you guys.
Because
then I could take my time to escape.
Well,
and you could just sit there and wait as I go, do-do-do.
Obviously.
Not at a window. Do-do-do. Not at a window. But there's a lot of fun ones. There's a lot of not so fun ones.
There's one where the whole house transforms and you're teleported to an alien dimension. There's one where nobody's revealed as the traitor and it's a treasure hunt, but then there's like traps for the treasure hunt. So like,
yeah, there's a lot of different things. Also, like, all the cards have some serious text and it adds a lot to the atmosphere if you have friends that are good.
Flavor text.
Where if you read in different voices and you pretend and like you can make a whole night out of it. Exactly. Or if you're with a bunch of monotone friends or people who are in a rush, then like the game loses some stuff.
Well, the game still works, I think, as a game with or without the flavor text.
Yeah, but I think the flavor text adds, in my opinion, if you have the right group.
And you have the time to play.
Yeah. And you have the time.
But that's what good flavor text does. It does add, but the game itself isn't fully based in the flavor text.
Yeah, it works without the flavor text.
Yeah. Still.
You can play a quick game and it actually is a solid
There's no such
game.
Thing as a quick game on this game. There's just long and longer.
No, well, it's a lot quicker than a lot of the cooperative.
It says minimum 30 minutes. I have not had a game that finished before 45 minutes, even with a well-played...
Wasn't that?
I think it was like 45 minutes.
That one was an hour.
I
didn't count. I didn't keep track.
But I'm sure there must be one that's 30 minutes if like luck is on your side, but expect an hour.
Oh, man,
minimum. Well, when you say luck is on your side, it means means like
the rooms you reveal are the haunt. Open.
I've had games
go revealed the haunt at a time when you, and it was the one that you needed, like the items that you already.
Actually,
found.
I was gonna say the opposite. What happens with the 30-minute games are the games where you reveal the haunt, and I've had this happen in within like the first or second omen. No one's prepared. The traitor has this really strong monster. He basically wrecks everybody with it right
that's
away.
True.
That's how most those are the short games.
I actually had a situation where it was the complete reverse, where it's like, all right, trigger this. I'm gonna mop the floor at everyone, and I had the worst haunt reveal ever, and it was just like, what am I supposed to do? So yeah, like I had one. I forget what it was, but it was like the weakest thing, and everyone was already like near me to destroy me, and I was like, this is the worst game ever. I think that was like literally the 30-minute game where. But it's neat. It's a neat game because you never know who the person is going to be the one to start the events of everything to go on, and then you're given this book, and it's like it decides which story continues, what event you're in, and then that person has to walk away. And yeah, depending on
the
like
traitor
what group,
walks away.
Yeah, so you have your book, and you're trying to figure things out and see what you can do to the team that essentially you were working with, while the other team is now basically like, okay, this person's done something, and it's really neat to see some of the events where your character doesn't die, your character transforms, your character is like a servant or something like that. So, and there's some events where like you can take over the others, and they become the traitor with you. So like it's just the multitude of events that can happen. It just makes this game really fun to get back into play with different people. Even if you're familiar with how the game works and how to upgrade yourself and what strategy you have an idea of doing, it changes all the time anyway.
You know what it felt like? And I know it came before that movie, but it felt like Cabin in the House.
In the woods?
Cabin in the House. Wow. Cabin in the woods. You know, like it got the setups like a which monster is going to attack depending on like what they're doing, like the bad omens they're going to get, like the book or the little girl, something like that. And it kind of reminded me of that. I'm like, well, this kind of, I know it came before, but it had that, like that vibe going through it. Am I wrong to say I was the only one who was new to this game?
Yeah. I was going to say, what were your opinions? Cause this is the first, we've all played it at least several times before.
I'm not
as a first time player.
I'm not going to lie and saying like, I'm a huge board game player. I'm not, but I do play some because I got an uncle who plays a lot of them, so I'm, you know, get around, and I played some in my younger times, still do, but I'm not a big player, and it felt like a really fun game. I didn't get like everything that was going on, but for the most part I got it. Like, it's pretty straightforward once you see everyone playing around, you're like, okay, so this is how it works. All right, it's not that complicated in the end. I guess with more games you eventually pick up some like tricks or, you know, stuff that you can
not
do
too. Really,
we've played I think maybe 50 games between
I mean, you know, like,
and we've played.
I know it's based on luck and like the omens you're gonna get and stuff like that, but at least you know how to use them properly.
What's you're more familiar with, like what rooms are expected to come out and what items?
Yeah, some expectations. I had no idea what I was going to run into for myself.
Yeah, you have a better idea of like what you need. Like, for example, there's the spear. The spear's fantastic because it allows you, I think, to
extra dice
to attack.
I'm surprised. Like, I spent a lot of time in the basement and I didn't get fucked.
The little girl saved
you. Took all the bad things already.
Yeah, I was just like, I had a bunch of items, and I'm like,
he got lucky because Wendell and Keith revealed the two bad basement rooms, and he fell.
I went into the pentagram. I came out alive,
and then I slid on the magic slide.
In the basement.
Yeah. Compared to a movie, I think it's more like 13 Ghosts, where the house is constantly changing, and there's different enemies that you could run into.
Well, per game, as you go through the games. Yeah. It's not like, I don't really have a movie to compare it to, but how would I put it? It's just a fun, lighthearted, to some extent, when you look at it in the terms of, like, a horror game.
Yeah.
Because all the things that happen are pretty, like, it's still pretty dark horror, but it's just, you're playing as, like, there's a little girl character, there's a little boy character, yeah. There's a priest character, there's the big hulking man guy, there's the
who's
two...
dumb.
There's Flash Gordon.
His name is, like, Ox.
Yeah, there's your Lara Croft and your crazy psychic lady.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sources.
My character likes shiny things.
So the characters all have like a little bio that comes along with them on their card.
Flavor.
No, actually, it's relevant for some of the haunts.
I would assume so.
The only thing relevant is the birth date.
Nope. No. There's one where it depends on if they like music, if they like dolls.
Oh, really?
If they like, yep.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of choices.
No, I figured it out. Like, they put it like, it felt more than just flavor. Because I read a bit of the book when he was revealing who the traitor was, and I saw some of the categories. I'm like, oh, okay, so my hobbies are important.
It's flavor
text. I could be the traitor because of it.
It's flavor text 49 out of 50% of the game.
Yeah.
49 out of 50 of the games. And then, but sometimes it matters.
Yeah.
Like, just like the birthday thing, I think that's a great way to decide who starts. Whoever character is closest to the date you're actually playing the game on is supposed to start the game, and it's a great way to start instead of rolling dice.
But we broke the rules.
Yeah, well, that's because you have to learn how to play.
That's fine.
Anyways, I like this game. I mean, again, it's one of those games where you have to be in the mood to play, and you have to have time to play, but it's a great game.
If for a board game night, it's definitely one you can pick up.
I definitely enjoyed this game. I think this is probably the third time I've played it, I think, if I remember right. And, you know, it felt good to kind of remember some of the stuff and play the game, so I enjoyed it. Yeah, yeah, I'll definitely play it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add? No?
Buy it. Buy it today.
I just want to add one thing. It's not the easiest board game. Like, you could pick it up, but there are certain levels, like, there are certain things where you have to know, like, how to play games.
It's not,
like, there's some of the traitor ones are super complicated.
Yeah.
Like, it's not for beginner gamers.
Well, actually, how would I put it?
You need at least one experience.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If one person knows how to play the game, yeah, it'll go smoothly. Even if you're playing one person and five non-players, you just explain a bit of the rules and they pick it up fairly quickly. I know that's how we started playing it the first time. Even if you're six random new people starting, eventually you'll figure enough of the game anyway to play more than a lot of these kinds of games. It's really you pick up and you can play versus something like
Eldritch Horror,
yeah. But what's really great about this game is that it's one of those evolving in the quote-unquote, it's always a different board game each time. We've played it a bunch of times and we've gotten duplicate scenarios. We even played all 50. It's great. The characters are fun. The flavor text is there if you want, but if you just want to play a quick game, you can totally ignore it and still get a good board game out of it. There is some luck to it. Sometimes you can be really lucky and sometimes you can just have the worst luck.
Yeah, like, don't fall
a
in
lot
the
of the game is based on die rolls.
Yeah.
And so if you don't roll, like, someone could attack you with six die, and if they roll all zeros, which is possible in this game,
but,
then someone who could roll with one die could beat you. So there is luck on this.
Yeah, but even then, it's still, like, it's a fair distribution.
Oh,
no
yeah.
dices are, like, loaded. Skewed one way. It's all, like, everyone has an equal chance, and it's like any game with dice. You can have the best strategy and still roll bad numbers, right?
Or you get the jock, who has great might and speed, but if you get a horror that's based on mental, you're dead.
Yeah.
But what's nice about it is that this board game has specific dice that they made where it's you have a 1 in 3 chance of 0, 1, or 2. And so I think that plays well instead of having a dice game where you have to go from 1 to 6 on one die. So
makes the math easy.
And the way they set it up is every time you do the haunt roll as well, you have 6 die and you have to roll them and try to beat the number of how many omens that have been revealed. There's 13 tiles. So no matter what, you are hit, you're gonna eventually trigger the haunt no matter what. So, like, they've really thought it through of, like, what dice to use, what methods to use for this. The only thing I would say that's a little overwhelming is when you have to find the, like, millions of little pieces to be like, oh, smoke is here. Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle through the pile of...
Well, that's because of how you organize them most.
No, but, like,
it depends.
It's all these little tokens.
Well, that's because what Peter does, not this one, the other one. So he puts them back in the frame that they came in.
Yeah.
And so when you're just looking for them, a lot of them are organized by what they are. Like, monsters are all in one area. Or that's what you can also do, is you can start taking out different bags and putting monsters in one bag, certain tokens in another, just so they are easier to find that regard.
So a lot of little pieces, but I think that would be the only, like...
But that's mostly, like, as you go along and, like, haunt setup. Actual initial setup is, like... Well,
I also like to point out this box is pretty good. Like, some boxes, you just throw everything in it. This box does have slots for cards, slots for your character, slots for this. So it does make make cleanup slightly easier.
And it's not one of those boxes that are wasted. Like, you know, like you buy some board games and the box is way bigger than it any right it needs to be, just because either one piece is large
Suro.
Or another. Yeah, that's my... I could fit two Suros in one box. And even then, I could probably fit a third game of Suro in the same box. Most of that space is useless.
For the board.
They could honestly cut it in half and make a folding board. Yeah. And anyway. Rating?
I give it just straight up 7 out of 10. Just, I would give it higher, but some of the haunts are just bad. But most of them are enjoyable.
I'm willing to give it a 8. I'd give it an 8 out of 10. The few times I've played it, I've had a lot of fun, and everyone's been very helpful, and I don't think I've really, like, gotten super angry after playing it, so that's always a good tell. If you're like, I hate everybody in
this
room. No, because
the flavor text just makes it so you can't hate them.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if they get into it.
This isn't Monopoly.
No.
No. 11 out of 10, it's okay.
11?
11 out of 10, it's okay.
It's okay.
I don't know, honestly, I feel like, I don't know, something around like 7.5?
No.
Like, so I would need to get, like, more experience with the game to give it, like, an honest view of it. I feel like it's a game... If you were to ask me, would I come back to this game, I would say yes. And I think that's a proper recommendation I could give.
8 out of 10 Peter Akimoto's, because that's just weird, and that fits with the board game's theme. No, it's definitely a good game. I think it's a good game for getting people into board games who don't normally play board games.
I think it's a good co-op board game.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say...
Introduction.
No.
I think it's a fine introduction game, but that's my personal opinion. Because when I first played it, I wasn't really big into board games, and I played this game, and it was like insta love to some extent. I just loved playing this, and I skipped a lot of classes to play some of these games.
We skipped a lot of classes to play this game instead. Yeah. We'd literally be like in the middle of it and be like, oh, I've got class or whatever, and then it was like, so yeah, this game is definitely a must have for people who are into board games, just because like Andrew mentioned, like, we've wasted so much time on it, and it's because it is a solid game. It's a good cooperative game. It's even stronger than a lot of the more recent cooperative games that we've played. Rating, still 8 out of 10. I think that's a solid rating for it, but it's definitely a game that you can go back to. It's not one of those games where you know the outcome of everything. This one, still don't know who... You can have the exact same outcome, but it won't be the same trader. So it's like everything and the layout of the board will always be different. So there's so much of it that can be that unique to it, that it's got endless play for it.
Actually, just to add on to that point quickly, is it's one of those cooperative games where the board isn't just destined to screw you. Like, I find like
it can help you a lot.
Like, this game is very like, it feels like, you know, baby's intro to cooperative games, because a lot of cooperative games we played, like Forbidden Island, Desert Place, the
Pandemic,
those games are just designed, even if it's you against the board, to just wreck you at every turn. Like, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse, where I find this one at least feels very balanced. Everyone still has a fair shot of staying alive at least until the game, to the end game, and even in end game,
well, you
anything
have
can
to
happen,
stay alive.
So.
You can't die before.
No, but I'm saying it's nice, because a lot of these games, it's like you die and you're screwed, and then it just exponentially gets worse. And while this one, I feel, it stays very consistent.
While you're dead, it gets worse.
Well, for everybody else.
Ah, I figured.
So join us in the next segment, where we'll be doing an anime roundup of the winter 2015 seasons of anime. How many times can I say anime in a sentence?
I bet you a lot.
This is Doug Walker, the Nostalgia Critic, and you are listening to Geeking Out at the Tower Podcast.
And we're back, and this is the second of our two main topics, where we're going to have a winter 2015 anime roundup, where we talk about our impressions about the season as it's going. So we're going to talk, I think, maybe about the first few episodes that have come out about some of these shows. We're going to talk about who should be watching them, what we think of them, and I think everyone's got a fairly varied list, so we'll start with Kevin.
I know in the last section I mentioned how I am really sick of zombie movies. I still am, but I am watching a series that came back. It's a second season called Tokyo Ghoul. Although I'm gonna say this season's not as strong as the last one. The last one was a lot stronger. It had a lot more of a story going about this guy kind of learning kind of the dark nature of the world, and he's now become part ghoul and has to deal with the similarities of what all the ghouls have to deal with now. And in this one, it's because the last one ended really quickly on like this massive fight, and it seems like they've just stuck to it in season two, and there's like so much that is not explained, at least not in the anime. If the manga explains it, they're not doing a good job in doing it, transitioning it to the anime. Lots of fights, lots of like characters that are like now being introduced, and you're just like, but what's going on?
I felt the first season was weak. I can't believe how weak this season is.
Like, it's just not, like, I'm not impressed with, because I was okay with the first season and it looked interesting. Like, it looked like they were building to something. And then it just became this weird fight fest of not making sense. Like, literally, they're, like, the easiest example that I can give without spoiling too much is a group of ghouls tried to save another group of ghouls. The group of ghoul that they tried to save start attacking the group that was saving them. And then I'm like, what is going on? So just, it's all over the place right now. I'm not looking forward to any more episodes, and I might actually stop watching the series because of that.
Anyone else seen it?
I watched the first series, and I thought it was really, like, not even the first series entirely. I watched a bit of it. I was like, this is really fucking weak. I mean, really weak and not impressive, not interesting. And yeah, I'm just thinking, keep going. And I heard the second season is even worse.
If you thought the first season was bad, don't even bother.
Yeah, I'm not gonna bother at all.
So I'm looking at the photo because I haven't seen this anime. It's got this guy with white hair who's wearing a lycra shirt. He's painted his nails black, and he has blood dripping from his cheek for no apparent reason, and a red eye and flowers in the background. I say gay and let it pass.
Rating out of 10, please.
Rating out of 10, I would give it 9 rainbows out of 10. It's a great show for little girls.
Stain on my face, Gabe.
Continue. Alright, I want to bring up a little show that you guys might have heard about. It's called Death Parade.
Ooh.
You guys, any of you have been watching it?
I watched it just this weekend.
Just this weekend. Got caught up to it?
Yeah, all 5 episodes.
Alright, Kevin? Nope.
You should have watched it. I told you to watch it.
Wait.
Death Parade.
Yes. I did actually watch it.
How about you, Peter?
No, I have not watched it yet.
It's about people dying and then going to this place called Quiddicam.
Quiddicam?
Anyway, and they're judged by they call themselves
Arbiters, right? Yeah.
And they're just deciding if they get to be reincarnated or if their souls goes into the void, like heaven and hell, like they tell them. The twist is the Arbiter can't tell those people that they are dead. He just says, you have to play a game and bet your life on it. They have to do it. It says, you won't leave this bar unless you play the game. And most people are like, whatever, he's probably crazy. And as they play the game, and this, like, they're probably winning some points against some other people, memories of their past are starting to coming back, and the reason why they're here until the end of the game, and then you realize, oh, I'm dead. And hit or miss, I guess, in some aspects, but more hit than miss. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna say, I'm feeling really strong about this show because it had a pretty decent first episode that I thought was a bit too, I want to say edgy. It was just people screaming too much with too much distortion emo faces going on. I was like, okay, but I did like the concept. And then second episode kind of treated us a bit, some of the audience, like retards of like, oh, this is really what was happening in the behind the scenes. I'm like, we sort of get that in the first episode. Thank you very much. But some things that were explained in the second episode weren't as clear, and that was kind of great. And I think from that point on, the show kind of built it back up. Like from 3, 4, 5, it really was a pretty good show. Really am enjoying it so far. I like sort of the dark atmosphere it has to it, but kind of like I really like the hope it has, like in the death of all those people, that there's a hope even for people who are going like to the void and reincarnation. I think it's a fairly strong show, and the opening is fantastic. Holy shit!
I wanted to mention that alone when Andrew mentioned it, he's like, you should take a look at this. This is, oh my god, the intro. I listened to it every time I was watching the episode.
Sorry. Oh, it's so good.
The intro. Honestly, my friend basically said, are you watching Death Parade? I'm like, no.
The sequel to Death Note?
No, I didn't. No. I'm like, oh, I heard about this on another podcast. It seemed interesting. And then I saw the intro and he's like, yeah, don't be fooled by the intro because, you know, the intro is still fine. But I already know what's going on. I watched it and I actually think the first episode, you're right, is super way too over-emotional. and it's very obvious if you've seen enough shows what the character is doing. But what's nice about the second episode is I like how they're showing you the background effect, how she's basically being an audience avatar.
It's all rigged also.
Yeah. She also doesn't, like how he also doesn't realize that he can only read the memories and he can only see what they show. He isn't actually all-knowing, all-seeing. What's also great about the show is that the character, even though he seems very bland, actually... the bartender, Arbiter. It's actually done subtly through animation. You see, like, the little ticks that he has when he's like, wait, I could have been wrong? Was I wrong? And it's very muted, but it's not, like, how I say, a bland performance.
Yeah.
Also, the animation is great because it's Madhouse. I think that there's a bigger story going on. We haven't even seen all the characters yet from the intro, and I think
when we look at the board, they got 9 games, 12 episodes. You can figure out where
it's going, more or less.
Where it's going, yeah.
But even now, 5 episodes in, I am definitely looking forward to more of the series. The characters seem interesting, even though you can sort of figure out some of that backstory. It's nice what little they do give you every episode. Definitely a good show, and for people that saying anime is being too moe, this is one of those shows that kind of bucks that trend a little, and I like
that. But their boss is a moe character.
She's not even like your typical. The only thing that makes her moe is that she's short.
Yeah.
And she's cute looking, but everything else about her is not. She's very adult. She basically runs the place. It's just one of those things like, yeah, we have to put in a short character because, you know.
I was short.
No, I know, but some people really take that seriously.
How about you, Coven?
I was actually surprised, but I liked the second episode of it because you got this other character that they're trying to, like, sort of...
A black hair woman.
Yeah, to be part of the kind of, like, the crew of what they're going to be doing. And it's neat to see that she's like, no, I think she was lying and she was doing this on purpose. And having exactly where the bartender before was doing that nervous tick. And he's like, wait, did I make a mistake? And that was really neat.
His boss just tells him, nope, your judgment wasn't right. And
no,
she says it doesn't matter.
Don't think about it. But which I still like because it does add like another like they're not perfect, so they're making judgments still without being perfect on
this.
They're
humans.
Which is interesting. So there's a lot more to it that's going to be interesting as it evolves. I think it was the third episode that freaked me out. I'm like, wait, like this is a pretty good episode. What's going on? And I was actually...
The bowling episode?
Yes. I was curious if like one of them had to go to hell.
Actually, that's one of the things.
That was nerve-wracking.
I was going to mention is that after the first game, they don't tell you what happens to anybody afterwards.
You just have to look at the elevators to look
But
at
even
the
then...
No. If you look up the elevators, they put different masks. If it's the white mask, they're going to reincarnation. If they put the red mask, it's the void.
Yeah, but it's crazy because if you look at the bowling episode, neither of them did anything wrong.
No, and
both
that's
are going to reincarnation.
No. And that's what freaked me out. I was like, wait, who's the bad one? And that whole episode, it was really curious. And then at the end, they show both masks, and they're both the reincarnation.
Oh,
were
they?
I was like,
I thought they looked different. That's
what No. And that's what I was like, oh, they can't both go, so it could be the opposite as well. So that adds another level of like, oh, what to expect from the people and stuff like that. Because in the first one, the guy who went like who went a little crazy is the one who goes to be reincarnated, while the girl who lied, quote unquote, is the one going to the void.
Well, she figured everything out, which is like the second episode it tells you, and she essentially, I mean, they still leave it very open-ended, but it's pretty obvious, like, from everything that they show you, that she essentially engineered it so that he would at least get a second chance.
So I don't want to ruin anything else. It's definitely worth it. It's a good show. I'm glad you suggested it. I'm definitely going to keep watching.
Actually, the best thing about that show so far, the best line is
besides the intro.
No. The best line about that show so far has been, "Can we have one last date before we go?
Yeah.
I'll give you 5 minutes."
What?
Then I'll take all the time you want.
And I kind of think that was actually really, like, it was a really nice episode. It ended up being a very, like...
It broke expectation of people are, like, expecting things.
Exactly.
That show. And quickly... broke it. Like, just third episode. This is not good. This is not going to be the same setup every time. Like, well, I'm going to out. Well, I'm going to out. And then it's like, nope. Even, both can go.
And even, yeah, episode 4, I think, is the best episode so far.
It's been a... You both did good.
Yeah. But episode 4, it's one of those things, like, if you have a 5-episode anime rule, if you already don't love the show after episode 1, episode 4 basically tells you why you should be watching this show. So...
Oh, I forgot the
results. Also, it is the Funimation license, too.
I forgot the results of 4, but no. Nonetheless, great series. Go for it.
All right, what are your thoughts on the cover?
As you've only seen the picture.
So, the picture, there's a silver-haired guy.
Show me.
That looks a hotel server.
He's a bartender.
So close enough. I understood that. He's catching some beads or some blood. Doesn't make sense. He has a very stoic face on. And then there's some, like, comic sections in the background with a naked chick, a really annoying teenage-looking girl, some weird old lady thing, a man playing with his beard, a shot of a girl's skirt, and just two people that look bored. And,
verdict?
I would say, could be interesting, but from this poster, it doesn't sound as good as you're explaining it to be.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that is deceptively better than it looks.
I would say 4/10 for visual poster.
Okay. As for myself, I'm watching this little show that I don't think anyone's watching. I'm talking about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Season 3, Part 2.
I've read it.
I'm just pretty much watching this show just to compare and contrast between the difference between the show and the manga. It's still holding up. Production values are kind of iffy. I enjoy the music.
Is it still David Production doing JoJo?
Yeah, it's still David Production still doing the animation for it. At times, the animation looks gorgeous. At other times, it looks a bit stiff and rushed. But this is a long series, so they're just taking their time doing the show. Hopefully, the ending between Dio and the Jotaro and his crew will look great. But hopefully, they don't cut any budget costs during the show. I'm watching it because I'm a big fan of the manga. And compare and contrast between the two.
I haven't watched the season, but I have watched the other seasons of JoJo. And it's super entertaining. The characters are really over the top.
And fabulous.
And fabulous. They're all muscular. They're all pretty hilarious. And this is one of the few animes where the black guy survives. And our group has mentioned that a lot of things, black guys die way too soon.
He dies way too soon, but he comes back.
Yeah. So this time, Black Phoenix guy, still around.
Black.
So yeah, this show's awesome. Has lots of great guys. Really bad haircuts, but you can't win everything. So... Yeah, I say watch it.
You don't watch JoJo?
I tried to. I can't get into it.
Okay,
you tried.
There's a few episodes that are really interesting. There's like the he's gambling souls ones from stuff, but like I've tried JoJo. I can't get into it.
Yeah, you watch the OVAs, but I don't know how the OVAs hold up today.
It's probably because you don't want to have a pink star on your back.
Okay.
Those pink stars are important.
So... I probably chose an anime that's even gayer than JoJo.
How gay are we talking about?
The Magical Boy Show.
Okay, so it's called Cute Earth High School Defense Club Love.
That show.
That's the one that you...
Yeah, that's the Magical Boys anime I talked about a while back. This show, if you've only seen the transformation sequence, which is essentially a carbon copy of the Sailor Moon transformation sequence,
Except hotter.
It's because there's boys.
Perhaps.
It basically looks like they're playing first-rate a Magical Boys anime. But at the same time, if you watch the entire show, it knows how silly it is, it knows how fluffy it is, it's a satire on the genre, while at the same time playing it as straight as it can in the gayest way possible. It is, like, how would I put this? This is not for everybody.
I mean, I watched the first episode, and I just couldn't get into it. I realized some of the things they said were dumb, and I did laugh, like, when they're forcing their pose, because they're like, what's going on? Yeah. But other than that,
Really not for
main
everyone.
Character's really bad.
Yeah, of course.
Which one's the main character?
The short red, the short guy.
The pink haired one or the blonde one?
The blonde
I'll
one.
I'll show you.
I haven't looked at the.
Is he the one that's actually gung ho about it?
Yeah.
Everyone else is just like,
So essentially, how this is, it's a bunch of teenage boys get locked into an intergalactic battle between a wombat and a hedgehog. Good news is the voice of one of the school. The student council president is Thierry Erde. So
Hiroshi Kamiya?
Yeah, Hiroshi Kamiya.
Hiroshi Kamiya managed to put himself himself in this mess. Oh, Jesus.
But he's like, all the time. He's hilarious. He's great. He's great. And the show is crack. It's silly. You go in knowing it's silly. If you're just looking for something really dumb to watch, it knows how dumb it is. It doesn't try to be anything like greater than that. It's fun. The transformation sequence makes me laugh and smile each time I see it. Oh man, definitely a fun show. If you like Sailor Moon, you'll get some kicks out of the show.
Right in the superior. Check this out.
I think the clip parts are gonna be funny, but I don't know if I'm gonna watch the series.
Oh, and playing this for some people who haven't heard of this show, just watching their reactions. It's like the Too Many Cooks reactions, or it's just like people watching this like, what am I watching? So yeah, definitely awesome.
I saw the clip that Andrew's talking about, or that he showed me the full intro, but I want to just talk about this poster, because this poster is all kinds of intense. It's got five guys, or maybe four guys and one girl looking guy.
No, they're all guys. Even the pink one's a guy.
Cross-dressing. I was talking about the one with the green hair.
They are not cross-dressing, actually.
They look like they're cross-dressing. You got this, like, super horny pink wombat that's blushing, and they're all carrying, like, dildo wands.
Love sticks.
Yeah. And three of them look like they're enjoying it. One person looks like they're tripping and falling, and the last person just doesn't give no shits about anything. He's just standing in the background like, whatever, I'm a girl, I'll deal with it.
He's a dude.
I give it super plus points for, like... going towards, like, you know, cross-dressing is okay, gender bending's fine, if you want to be a guy or a girl. I'm going by the poster here.
So good.
Also, the evil people transform by yelling out conquest,
though. And it has the word love on it, and, you know, it looks like a very good, happy, love anime-type thing. The wombat looks really out of place.
Show it to your grandparents.
It's an alien, of course it does.
Yeah, it's a grandparent show. Show it to your grandparents.
I feel like this wombat's probably more annoying than Khan from Bleach.
Oh,
God.
I think
Khan was amazing. Shut up.
Have you seen anything from this, Peter?
No, I just seen still images, and that's about it.
Anyways, from this poster, I would totally give it 4 out of 5 love Hinas.
That rating makes no sense, even in context.
Yeah, well, this poster makes no sense, so it's that.
Even in context.
I would probably not watch it, but I might give in and call it my dirty little secret.
Kevin.
Dirty deeds done, didn't you?
On to you.
Alda Noah Zero, second season.
Oh, snap. The train wreck continues.
Train wreck? Not even. I love this show. This show is well done. I like the fact that, like, you've got this kid who's literally, like, using pretty much maybe the piece of shittest of fucking robots, and he's using his freaking head and, like, figuring things out to try to like get the upper hand.
Don't forget his robot eye.
No, that's only in the second season.
Yeah, because what we're talking about.
Yeah, but in the second season, there's events from the first season where he ends up losing his eye and basically got his brain shot, and he now has a basically kind of like a robot implant with an eye piece as well that's assisting him with all these other things now. And he's using it to, like, his full advantage to, like, calculate trajectories, dealing with the specific movement, stuff like that. And I love the shit out of this. To put in comparison to something like Gundam Gireko, two completely different type of shows for like, the mecha genre. And I really like where Alda Noah Zero is going, where it's, like, the story, still not the strongest. It's kind of a rinse and repeat of a lot of stuff that we've relatively have heard already. But, like, having the villain character and the hero character and the way that they are dealing with things and how they strategize with things, I love it. Like, one of the episodes, the villain character just starts shooting in a direction. You're like, what the hell's... why? And it plays a part later on into the episode, and it is dealt into a trap situation. And it's fairly well explained. I'm not going to say that it's perfectly scientifically accurate, because, again...
Anime
plus mecha plus... But very plausible, very realistic in a sense. And I like that level of how they're writing these things into it. So no, I'm really enjoying the crap out of this mecha.
Because I know you're not Xavier over here is doesn't like it that much.
Well, don't get me wrong. I think that you're super entertaining. But
I think the
for all the opposite reasons of him.
I'm going to put it this way. This show is basically the second coming of Code Geass. Yeah. The way the character, but like reverse, if you reverse, what is it? Lelouch and Suzaku. The size that Lelouch and Suzaku are on. Because,
Because
it's, so I'll put it this way. Half the show feels like Code Geass season 2, and half the show feels like Code Geass season 1. So, Thrain? What's his name? The blonde kid.
Slain
yeah. Troyer. No.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, Slain is basically Code Geass season 2. His entire storyline seems crazy like Code Geass season 2, while the main character, Inaho, is basically in Code Geass season 1. He's calm, he's calculating, he is messing with people, but it's still not, like, ridiculous.
And here's kind of sort of where I learned my problems with Alno and, like, in general. I just think the main characters are fucking boring.
I totally don't disagree with that.
Hey, Alone-san, the eggs are on sale. Oh, God.
And I think maybe that's why I'm liking it a bit, because, the hero, quote-unquote, is...
autistic.
I was gonna say, he's autistic, and he, like, I thought it was clear, it was clearly, like, indicated that, like, no, he's a
keeps special... interested, no, autistic.
No, like, but he's a special kid, like, he's got his, like, little moments, and, like, the kid doesn't know how to be kind of normal, like, quote-unquote.
The one that said it was basically, like, Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang.
No, I know. Yeah. Not at all.
The main character, it's in the terms that he's smart, but he has a hard time interacting with people. But as time goes on, he does get a bit better at it. Trust me, I try not to reference that show as often as I cannot.
Gangbang Theory.
But no, honestly, the show isn't bad. It ain't great stuff either. But at least the mech battles and the mech designs are good. So as far as that goes for a mecha show, it's up there. Well, it's up there in the middle.
Some in the middle.
So I like it a lot. You like it, okay, and you're just like, it's
boring. Well, yeah,
he thinks it's terror bad.
Peter, what do you think?
I haven't watched the show.
Then it's time for my post review. And when I first saw this, when you started talking about it, I saw the guy on the front with the blonde hair. Looks like a guy I want to punch. He just looks like he has the stupidest face, and I thought he was playing with two yo-yos at once. But it turns out that he just, like,
this isn't the gutch.
It's just like the shoulder pads of the mech in the background. And guy in the background that's, like, bowing to him, and it looks like he wants to commit suicide. And it looks like I was like, oh god, I have to follow this loser around all year long. This is gonna totally suck.
No, only half the time.
Now that you tell me that he's autistic, I feel bad for my original from...
No.
This one.
He's the dumb one that does crazy dumb things because he has this weird crazy.
Yeah, well, he looks dumb, and the guy behind him looks like he wants to kill himself because he has to listen to this.
He's
dumb
essentially
guy.
Suzaku from Code Geass.
How much out of 10?
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't give this much. I mean, the mech sort of looks cool, but it also looks like it's a ripoff from Gundam, like,
it
original.
Isn't. They're actually
the
pretty well designed.
Well, from this picture, it looks pretty shitty. He's got the little yellow spikes coming out of his head on the top and on the sides. Yeah, I'm sort of tired of kids driving mechs. There's a lot of them.
Well, okay, then get rid of, like, what, 90% of the genre?
I just think it should just change it up a bit. Just have disgruntled old people driving the mech. Back in my day, we didn't need no fancy moves.
Voltons, motherfucker.
I want to see a mech carrying a cane and just beating on the young guys. That's not how you do it.
Thank you, buddy.
All right.
So. One more thing.
Your turn.
Dorado Ross second season, real quick, because it's a show that's been, like, I've following for a very long time when it's first aired in, what, 2010?
Yeah, it's been a while since the show's
been
done.
It's been a while, but now they've announced everything, like, the first core for this season, second course this summer, and the third core for January next year.
Oh, they're doing three cores? Interesting.
Well, the novels are finished.
Oh, it's about, yeah, the first one was in 2010.
So they're catching up, and they're finishing it. So, because it's a sequel, I don't want to talk too much about it. Some people could be interested. I'm saying, never watch Dorada. Give it a try, because it's a pretty great show.
If you've seen Bakano, it's a more chronological kind of story.
It's a more traditional anime.
And
because Bakano is, to my eyes, one of the best anime that has ever been made. Easily.
It's up there. It's, like, definitely in the top. It's definitely
Dorada is not that.
No.
But Dorada is... pretty damn good.
Same author.
Yeah.
Yeah, they both take place in the same shared universe.
Yeah, they're also in the shared universe.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Isaac and...
two of the characters from back in the show.
Appear. Oh.
Yeah. So that's how...
Because they're... Spoiler, immortal at the end.
Also, you see a lot of different anime posters from the same company that does the show, I think. A lot of Aniplex shows show up in the show, and they do make references to a lot of animes as well.
And they do make... Well, not all characters. Two of them.
A few of them, yeah. But it's a... It's not a very action-oriented show either, but it's a decent...
It's got some
mix.
Action, but it's got like supernatural stuff.
Yeah, no. There's supernatural elements. It's like a slice of life, but with a little bit of the supernatural over it.
Yeah, and some little bit of action here and there. Yeah. Because they got like crazy characters like a biker with no head.
Yeah, the headless
that
horse.
That is the most adorable character of that show. They got my favorite character, Shizuo, who just wrecks everyone.
He hasn't been much in the... Well, I only seen the first episode of season two.
He hasn't been much around because arc is not about him, so...
I would put it this way. If you've seen the first season, you like the first season, season two is pretty much more of the same.
You know who's going to get a heart this season? Simo.
Why is he getting
Black
a heart
Russian.
On?
Oh, nice. Nice.
Huh? I heard you said someone's getting a hard on.
No, an arc.
Oh,
an arc.
Oh, what's your?
He just likes to hear what he likes to hear.
Yeah,
I noticed. Problem is the poster's super boring. It's just a bunch of high school characters standing around. But at season one of Gerard, it was super good. So I say catch it, even though this poster sucked.
Peter.
Yattermer Nights. It's pretty much if you haven't heard about the Yattermer series, it's pretty much like a superhero show. And this is like a darker version of the Yattermer series, where it takes place like 100 years after a great war. And somehow the Yattermen team has built like their own society that's open to like the public, except for like evil people. Pretty much the characters in the show, which are like the the Dorobao gang, which is basically like their main nemesis. And pretty much it's very dark Tazunoko show. It's kind of like Karas if you think about it. It's pretty much like Karas.
Is it more than 6 episodes?
It's gonna be 12 episode series. I watched the first 3 episodes. It's a bit slow, but I'm gonna give it another episode to see if it gets good or maybe better. But I'll let's wait and see approach to this show. Keith, right, what's your poster review?
Oh man, this poster has got it all. It's got a world in the background with the Saturn rings going around it. Super cool. It sort of looks like Earth. It's got a giant skull. It's like a girl cosplayer that's dressing up as like Beautiful Joe.
That's not surprising. It is Tatsunobu after all.
And then it's got like two dudes that look like they're completely useless. One guy's holding a screwdriver. And just wearing the ugliest green outfit. It's like he wants to be like Robin Hood without the hat. And then some like fat guy in a brown blackish
He's the
thing.
Muscle man in the group.
Yeah. He looks like an idiot too. Is that like a whisk of hair on top of his head? Yo man, this show looks amazing. I think she's holding a wrench too. Like, it looks like they're like mechanics from hell. It's great. Definitely 10 on 10 for dumbness. Looks like a hilarious show.
I have nothing to say.
Look at this poster. How could you not say you want to see
that? Have
you
seen it?
This is actually one of the few animes I've not seen the first episode of.
Tatsunoko, they usually produce some good stuff. Yeah. Karas is pretty much in that debatable zone, because that ending is really not that good.
It's not Gonzo, but...
Yeah.
So great poster.
Don't talk about Gonzo.
to Gonzo's defense, they made one of the best anime of all time. Boku no Hero is one of my favorite shows, but
animation aside...
You know what Gonzo did that is one of the best anime? Gangutsuo, The Count of Monte Cristo.
I love that show, and I really liked how his coats always changed.
My only problem...
It was very fun animation.
...is that they don't introduce the mech element until way too late. That was my only gripe with it, and otherwise, even then, it still gets a 10 out of 10.
Don't see me coming.
He was such a good duke, and he looked like a vampire.
I think that's what they were
going for. He was a vampire!
Actually, that whole quick sideline, Gaguto, the whole aesthetics of that entire show is just so... makes no sense.
It's
that
good.
Was Gonzo.
But it's good.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, you would never...
His coat was amazing, and I wanted one for so long.
If you told me Gonzo made that, I'm still telling you go to hell, because I don't think that's true.
Gonzo might also Last Exile.
I didn't see that one, actually.
It's pretty good.
But anyway, that was a sideline. Yattermane Night, check it out, I guess.
Kevin?
Just the poster, not the anime.
Andrew.
I'm going to talk about Kuroko no Basuke Season 3, or Kuroko's Basketball Season 3. So we're picking up in the continuation of the Winter Cup arc, which is, I think, the final arc of the show. Manga is almost done as well, so I think they're going to end around the same time, a la FMA Brotherhood kind of style, where they'll end very close to each other. So if you've seen the first season or two, it's basketball with pretty boys. It's fun. There's some craziness there. In the start of the third season, season, you don't really get to see the main characters play, but you get to see a lot of the secondary characters who have been well developed over the entire last two seasons. And the main characters are about to start a match now, so I am actually not even. They haven't even played a game yet. They're like saving them for like the mid-season break or whatever. Otherwise, if you enjoy sports anime, these are one of the ones where, yeah, there's a pretty boy element, but it's not like, oh my god, all the boys are there. It's like one of those like Fujoshi shows, but so light on the Fujoshi that, you know, it's still an enjoyable sports show. It's very much a sports show, and if you enjoy them, it's a very good basketball sports show, and it's really fun to watch. It's like Captain Tsubasa, but with like basketball to some extent.
I find that the show, like, it quickly reminds me of Aisho 21. You've got these abilities that make no sense, but if you...
I think basket is more crazy than Aisho 21, though. Aisho 21 has some pretty crazy stuff.
You've got guys who can apparently super duplicate people, while in, like, Aisho 21, you've had the shuttle pass, the Phoenix Pyramid defense. No.
Read Captain Tsubasa, that's where that's drawing from as well. I just went way back with my reference.
No, but I mean, you liked Ice Shield 21, and you like sports anime. Kodokono Basket's really there in the same level. It's really fun. I like the characters. I kind of want a plushie of the little dog.
Oh, he's so cute!
So cute! I don't know. It's like, it's definitely got like a lot of energy of each of the characters and all the skills, and you do kind of, they kind of show like all the hard, like the struggles that they've had. Very similar to when I was watching Aisha 21.
It's good sports anime.
Very good sports anime.
I've seen a bit of the first season. I'm planning to read it actually, because it's like, I've heard that it's just, and I've seen bits of it, of like, it's just a crazy, literally balls to the wall sports manga, and I like Aisha 21 a whole bunch. So if you're gonna go crazy on sports anime, just go crazy that way.
Yeah.
Or do Initial D. Be about cars!
Pete, have you seen Kurokono Basket?
I see the first season. I'm planning to marathon once season 3 is done. But if you like Slam Dunk, you will like the show.
Yeah, I would say people will like Slam Dunk also.
Keith, your poster review on Kurokono Basket season 3.
I would say this is a racist basketball team. The photo has a bunch of people in different jerseys, so I'm guessing they're on different teams, hopefully. But the black guy is obviously the least shown on the poster. They don't even show him from the front, while everyone else is sort of looking at the screen. He's looking away, so you only see half his face. You got a guy playing with glasses. You know you don't wear glasses.
He's not black. He's just darker.
He's not black.
He's totally black.
He's just a darker Japanese.
Yeah. You got a guy...
Darker Japanese.
You have a guy wearing glasses, even though he doesn't have the proper protective eye gear, so that's just unsafe for basketball.
Safe for basketball.
And then you, like, are they, their hair is color-coded. You got the blue-haired people.
Yeah, because their name blondes. Is actually...
Yeah.
Their names are actually color-coded to their hair, technically.
So,
but yeah.
So the pink guy's gay, right?
What?
Pink hair.
Nope.
No, he's just the leader.
There's no indication, and actually he's super smart.
I'm glad.
Not gay, though.
That's fine.
None of them are actually gay.
I like this metrosexual look.
I don't know.
Yeah.
No.
There's a lot of bromance.
There is a lot of bromance, but none of them are actually... They all have girlfriends, technically.
Well, they all...
I don't think any of them really are in a relationship.
Everyone has a cover.
I'm sorry.
So, this anime poster looks kind of interesting, but there's no action shots, just a bunch of people sort of posing, holding balls. Yeah, no.
I don't know. They don't straight up.
Wait. The poster where guys are holding balls, and you're like, I don't know. This is why we question whether you're gay or not sometimes, Keith.
That is why I've been called the worst gay guy ever. But I am not going to just watch an anime because there's a lot of pretty boys in it, okay? There are a shit ton of animes with pretty boys that are garbage, and I've learned not to waste my time with them. I find it interesting that you would bring that up when every anime you've mentioned today has been all guys, no girls.
By the way,
because I've only mentioned two, actually.
I kind of stole a few.
And he stole the one that actually has a guy main character that looks like a girl. It's really weird.
Yeah, so
I think that's supposed to be a guy.
So, anyway. If you like sports animes, this is probably a good one. It seems like they have a lot of characters, but the poster, again, is not the greatest. Too much white. Not the people, but the background. They could have, like, had some interesting things going on.
I'm sure that's where he was going with that.
Every shot is so dense.
You make no sense, Keith.
Whatever, it's a post-review.
It's a post-review.
Did you have another one you wanted to talk about? about...
No, I just wanted to bring up, like, that's why I'm questioning, like, if there any of them are in a relationship, because you've got, like,
none of them are actually in a relationship.
One of the main characters literally has, like, his master, which is, like, a former women's basketball champion, whatever.
Who sleeps in the bed with him, naked.
Who sleeps in the bed naked, and he's all like, why are you doing? Throws clothing at her. I'm like, what?
Does he get a nosebleed?
Because he's Japanese, and Japanese boys aren't into sex.
Apparently.
Well, that's what they want you to think.
Anyway, so did you have any...
I'm going to talk about, real quickly, I'm going to talk about Sokyo no Fafnir Dead Aggressor.
All right, so...
Want to repeat what you just said?
Sokyo no Fafnir Dead Aggressor.
Exodus.
Fafnir.
All right, Fafnir Exodus, the second season of a mecha show that came out in 2005, Gogzebek.
Wow.
So, the story behind Fafnir, well, the production of this second season is...
Same face, Hirai.
Oh, I love him. I love him, Isashi Hirai.
Actually, hold on. Have you seen, what is the one with the kids? The, the knights, the mecha one. Did you see that one?
Knights of Sidon?
No. The prince.
Majestic Prince.
Majestic Prince.
No.
Okay.
That is, on a side note, that is a pretty amazing mecha show.
It's a lot better than it looks.
Oh, man. Like, most deceiving looking show of all time. You watch it and realize, holy shit, these characters are hilarious.
And they're actually developed.
And they're interesting. And, well, the antagonists are a bit weak in Majestic Prince. The rest is, like, uber strong. The CGI mechas are amazing for once, and their fight scenes are choreographed
really well.
Perfectly.
Oh, God. Anyway.
Anyway.
Fafnir. Side note.
Fafnir. So, Fafnir had its first TV show, 2005, 4, something like that.
Yeah.
Was not a rousing success. It had some fans, but, you know.
It was a cult hit.
And then it got basically, like, sort of a surge in popularity back in 9 or 10, something like that.
That's when they released the movies.
And that's when they talk about doing the movie Heaven and Earth. They got a bit of delay, but in 2011 they got it out and say, we're gonna do a TV show about it, Exodus. It's gonna happen in 2000, if I remember correctly, they said it was going to be 2012, and here we are, January 2015, it has come out. But looking up, right, I have the TV show at home. It's done by Funimation now. It has been picked up because it was, what's the company that, was it Genion?
Yeah,
it shut down, so they had no more releases of it. So yeah. I think it was Genion who had
it was Funimation rescued it.
And then Funimation rescued it, put it on a Blu-ray and DVD combo, and just give it just a bit of popularity, I guess, over here. Nothing big or anything. And I rewatched it quite recently, and I noticed, you know, the animation is a bit weak sometimes because Gzebek was not the best studio at the time. Isashi Hirai also can't make really good faces. The mechas and Fafnir were pretty great from the get-go.
I've only seen like 3 episodes.
But they didn't have anything susceptible to work on the animation. Now they've moved the mecha to CG, which is always something that worries me because I'm kind of a purist when it comes down to animation. But it was really great. So far, the show has been fantastic. If all those delays were to, like, make the animation a bit better, the CGI a bit better, the story seems to be, like, kind of fitting and going more coherently in the first season. You know what? This could potentially be one of the best anime of this year if they keep going in the right direction.
Oh, it has some at least one of the top 10. Because there's some competition coming up.
Oh, yeah, there's some competition coming up. And, I mean, I'm a huge, huge Fafnir fan for as long as I can remember. It's one of the first animes I've watched. And I've watched it 3 times, and it still holds up in my mind. A bit less than at first, but still pretty strong. And it's been really great. Like, going back into this world felt really great. The characters have matured. They introduced some new ones that, you know, are taking their places slowly. And it's just great. It's a really great TV show. I'm so glad that...
Can you say great a few more times?
Great. Honestly, it's amazing. I'm honestly very surprised. Because a show that gets delayed so many times, you sort of assume this, the worst when it comes out. An additional comes out, and it seems like there was no delay to begin with. So I'm genuinely surprised by how good it is. And I would recommend everyone to watch Fafnir, the first TV show. It's really great. How about your poster review?
So the poster is interesting. It's got two mechs sort of shoulder bumping each other.
Yep.
It's got what I assume is a guy and a girl.
Nope, black. Two guys.
He just has really long hair.
Okay, really long hair.
Cut them off.
Who seem to be the main characters because they're the middle and they drive the purple mech and the white mech, I'm guessing. And then there's 5, like, brats.
Three of them are brats. Two of them are old.
Okay, and I just have a question. The one with the red hair and the bandana, is that a dude also?
No, that's a girl.
It's a girl. Because I would like to point out that she's totally got a bulge in the poster.
I see where you're coming from, but...
Yeah. So, I don't know why they gave her a bulge, and they made the lines to make the bulge in her little skirt there, but it's an interesting poster. I actually watched Sukkyo no Fafner when it came out.
Really?
I didn't think it was that bad. I didn't think it was great either, so I might be willing to check this one out.
The one you said that about is Canon Memphis, if you remember. That's the one from the Federation who gets rescued.
Oh, yeah.
That's a woman.
Yeah, it is. Maybe she got an implant. Maybe she had an operation, you know. Huh. In this time and age, we accept those things.
Actually, I'm looking at Zebex Works right now. They produced a lot of actually decent things.
They produce a lot of crap, too. But they produce some good shows.
But yeah, there's like their first show, Sorcerer Hunters.
But Fafner now, the second season, is being done by Zebek Zwei, their second studio.
Oh.
It's a different studio.
Okay.
Split up. But yeah, sorry. Taking a lot of time over Fafner and how great, great it is!
That's good.
Next show we're talking about is called Maria, the Virgin Witch.
I have not heard good things about this.
I watched the first three episodes.
It's okay, but... Well, for those who don't know what the show is about, the show takes place during the Hundred Years' War between France and London. And pretty much, you have this witch named Maria who basically stops all the fighting or conflict between England and France. So pretty much, Maria just stops all the fighting and uses her powers to just, like, stop all the combat between the French and the English, or British. A lot of religious people and even Archangel Michael are trying to tell her to stop interfering in human life and that they should resolve their own conflicts either through war or peace instead of interfering using her witch powers. But there's a constant mention of that if Maria loses her virginity, she loses her whole power. So that's like the main focus of this series. Like if she has sex, her powers are gone.
So does that mean every single bad guy is just trying to rape Maria throughout the entire show?
No, she likes this one guy that keeps on kissing her hand and always saying nice things to him. To her, he always says nice things to him.
She's a little bulge.
Yeah, it's a weird show. It's very an adult theme. Like in the second episode, there's like two priests that are having sex. It's true. It's
with
just
each
like
other.
This,
well, there's
what?
Also from what I've heard.
No, apart from each other.
I don't know. It's two priests having sex. It could be with little children. It could be with each other. It could be with some other people.
No, apparently, from what I've heard, there's like, there's an incubus and a succubus in the show that go around basically sexing up
succubus.
The town.
Yeah, and then there's like, what I think the incubus went as a female, and the succubus is a male. I'm not quite sure.
No, reverse.
And then
it's
there's an incubus in the middle.
Yeah, but then there's like in the second episode, I went to some guy who's like, oh, I don't want to have sex with women. They're old or they're disgusting or something like that. It's like, I prefer like little boys or little girls. That's what he said in context. So it's kind of creepy also.
What's the name of the owl again? Artemis?
I think it's Artemis. I'm not quite sure. Yeah.
So what prompted you to watch this?
It's by the same creator who did Momushi? What's that show with the... It's Mayamushi. With the bacteria.
Oh, the germaphobe.
Yeah, the germaphobe.
The germaphobe anime.
Yeah, it's by the same author.
He also did Gin no Saji, if I'm not mistaken.
Gin no Saji is done by the person that's Fullmetal Alchemist.
Oh, okay.
That's not the same person.
Germaphobe gives me that. Germaphobe anime. I'm just looking it up quickly.
it's a unique series at best, I have to say.
Did you actually type in germaphobe anime?
Yes, because that's what the anime is about.
He said the name.
What was it? No, he didn't get it.
No, Gin no Saji is it.
No,
the other one.
No, it was
Moyashimon.
Moyashimon,
there we go.
Oh, right!
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Oh boy. a lot of things came into places right now. The puzzle is full now. Okay.
It's a unique show. It's mostly for an adult audience. I don't think like young people will like this show, but
shoot your kids.
Yeah, there's a lot of like sex and a lot of stuff going on screen and off screen. So yeah, Funimation's releasing the series online. At least check it out, but you might not like it.
Check it and then give it the rain check.
So let me guess, Keith, auto hate?
I don't know, because I'm looking at this poster, and if you take Maria and the owls out of the poster, it looks super good. It's got a battle going on in the background, it's got a dragon, it's got muted colors, some characters that look interesting, and then in the foreground, you have, I don't want to say slut-shaming, but if this girl can't have to keep her powers, has to stay a virgin, Maybe she shouldn't be wearing the most skimpiest latex thing, and the only thing that's covering her vagina is like a green belt and a flap of material. And then she has three owls, a green one and a red one and a blue one. It looks like Maria Angry Birds meets a decent show. I maybe I'm wrong here, but that does not seem like the outfit for someone that wants to stay virtuous.
No. I have to agree with Keith. Clothing could be useful on her.
All right. Do you have another one?
I would say my rating of this poster in the end is 5/5 without Maria, 2/5 with Maria.
Peter, your next anime.
The next anime I watch is probably the best anime of this winter season is Assassination Classroom.
It's a ridiculous shonen anime that's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It's based on a popular Shonen Jump series. Weekly Shonen Jump series. Basically, one day, 70% of the moon is just gone. The only thing that's left is just like a moon crest. And you have this weird yellow alien octopus creature proclaiming to the world leaders that, I blew up the moon. And you're also, next. I have conditions. I'm going to blow up the Earth next March if, no one can stop me. And, I want the kids in like a Japanese classroom to kill me. So that's pretty much the whole story of Assassination Classroom.
What?
Wait, you haven't seen this?
I've heard of it, I didn't realize it was that, like...
No, the concept sounds really stupid, but...
But honestly,
really,
if you watch it, it's great.
It's the best way I can describe it, it's like GTO meets aliens for some weird reason.
Actually, I think that is an apt description.
That is a pretty good description, because the teacher does help them.
Yeah, the teacher's name is Kuro Sensei, so he's basically like... teaching his kids, hey, let's do a poem about octopus and tentacles. And that's what they learn in class. Best show I've watched this season.
I wouldn't say it's the best show I've watched this season, but the shows I've watched have been for other reasons. I'm really enjoying Kuroko no Basuke Season 3. But as a non-sequel, it's definitely one of the best ones to come out this season,
and
for sure.
It has a catchy opening theme song also.
Yep.
It starts slow, but when it picks up the chorus, I think it does.
I don't think it's a great opening. I just think it's catchy.
It's fun and catchy, it's really nice.
It's not the new opening of Seven Deadly Sins.
I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen that either.
Assassination Classroom, it's a fun anime. You get to learn a bit about the students as you go along. There's some interesting creative ways that they sometimes try to kill them. Episode 3 brings in an interesting new character, and the show is just fun to watch. Catchy-ish opening.
They tried to suicide bomb him a couple of times.
I was trying not to say anything spoilery, but...
that's part of the show.
But yeah, the way they try to kill him is pretty cool. The transfer students is pretty interesting. The students will all sort of get their own episodes. I don't know how long they're planning on running this. I'm kind of curious to see if they're going to do a... We end it, or if they're going to leave it at like an open ending kind of thing. I think it's slated for it's actually slated for 22 episodes. I think it's on the Noita Mina
block. They're not going to catch up the manga for certain. So.
That's good. So they'll probably end it on a cliffhanger, open ended kind of thing.
And they'll wait for the manga to get some ground speed in, and they'll catch up.
There's probably definitely going to be a second season because this seems very popular
right now.
It's
a very popular manga.
So. And it's on the Noita Mina block, and they usually produce some good stuff, so... any thoughts?
It's a great. I think it's a really good show. I would recommend either watching or reading it because so far it's been a pretty accurate adaptation. So,
Is it more clear in the manga that it's a male main character?
Nagisa?
Yeah, because the entire first episode, I thought she was.
He was a girl.
He was a girl. And then at the end, it's
a
like,
guy. It's a guy, but he's very short. That's why.
it's the way they dress him, feminine
appearance.
And it's like his. I think his voice actress is also.
Is it the blue-haired person with the little like pink-tailed thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
you can see why I thought that for most of the first episode.
I was going to say it was very progressive letting him wear pants.
Girls wear pants in Japan.
Well, all the other girls are in skirts, and this one was in pants. But I guess if it's a dude,
yeah.
Well, we'll get to my poster review once you guys are done.
I think we're ready for your poster review.
Okay, so this poster review is super intense. Right in the middle of it, there's like a Harry Potter professor that happens to be tentacles and a yellow
Walmart logo.
Yeah, it looks like they took like the Facebook happy face and stuck it on a tentacle beast and called it a professor. And then I thought the rest of it sort of looks like when the students go to the island and have to kill each other.
Battle Royale.
Because it's a bunch
of Montreal Grand Prix.
Yeah, because it's a bunch of people with like different weapons. So like you got this guy with a knife and I was like, man, that guy sort of lost out. Then you got like two people with handguns. You got a guy with a machine gun. You got a girl that looks like she's got like a spray can that she's about to put in her mouth and she looks super worried about it. And then you got a guy with a baseball. And I feel like he's a looks like the happiest shit in the world. He's like, I'm totally gonna knuckleball it. Then you got like some guy posing like, yeah, I'm the best, with his like thumb and finger on his face.
He's the best character so far.
And you got some shirtless guy in the background, like he's wearing his jacket, his shirt's open, and he's like, whatever, I'm gonna take this person out. And then there's one smart girl in the back who's just stretching. She's like, if we're gonna kill this guy, I'm gonna gotta do my calisthenics. Gotta be ready.
And so out of 10?
Out of 10, I think this movie looks super fun. I don't know. It looks, or it's anime, whatever. I don't know why the redhead is like, has one gun in one hand and he's using his fingers to look like a gun in the second hand, as if he was jealous.
It's part of his character.
I thought he was just doing that Japanese game where you put the fingers up people's bums and he just missed or something. But yeah, it looks super fun and it looks like a nice, interesting locale. They're out in the country in some boondock place.
1,000 years of pain.
Akihabara or whatever. And it just looks like a fun anime. The squid guy doesn't look like he goes with the rest of the thing, but sure.
Oh, yeah. Jun Fukuyama, bitch.
I would say this poster is maybe the second best poster of the day so far. Mainly because that beautiful Joe whatever thingy looks great.
Oh, this anime is going to be good.
Yeah, of course it's going to be good.
No. I'm looking at the director. The director, Seiji Kishi. Yeah, no, this is going to be a good anime. He does good stuff.
I saw Angel Beats at the top of the list. I'm like, no.
You didn't like Angel Beats?
Ugh. Oh, yeah. Angel Beats was a pretty great comedy. And then they added drama. Oh, boy, did that feel wrong.
Well, that is another conversation for another time.
Also, I like the fact that from your synopsis, it's like everyone's going to kill the teacher. And the teacher's just sitting there with chalk in a hand.
Because he can move at Mach 20.
And a chocolate bar in the other hand. And I'm going to snack on my chocolate bar and just be outside without a chalkboard and have a piece of chalk. Because, like, who needs chalkboards? He's just a chill-assing teacher. He looks so happy. How can he destroy the moon?
How much of 10?
Oh, man. I'm going to give it 8 tentacles out of 10.
All right. So
all leftovers.
Just, we're going to go quickly through some of the continuing from the fall 2014 list of anime. Just a few shows that we are watching that we enjoy. I'm hoping that we all enjoy.
Let's go. Let's talk a bit about Reconquista Bellfighters. Let's go.
I'm going to say let's not talk about Reconquista because I think it's an anime that's going to pull itself together in the last bunch of episodes and everything will make sense.
You know what? Nothing makes sense right now. Because it's Tomino.
Right now, I think Reconquista is a much better show than Bellfighters Try.
No.
100%.
No.
They're very different. Okay, this is a matter of personal opinion. I think there are two very different shows that should not be compared because they're trying to do two very different things.
Agreed.
And I think when Tomino said at the beginning that he was making this show for your children and not for you, he wasn't kidding. I feel like... Because this is like, I don't know, it's like he's giving an even bigger middle finger to Toei and Bandai than he was in...
You mean Sunrise?
Sunrise, then Turn A Gundam. Because this, like right now, he just keeps adding characters, and I'm like, this is all gonna make sense soon, but right now, I don't even know what is going on.
The mechas are pretty in the animation.
Wait, you're 3 episodes behind on Reconquista?
They're about to.
I'm at episode 10.
They add in a completely new faction.
I know.
Yeah.
I know what's happening in the show right now.
So, you know why? It's Tomino, that's why.
No, I love Tomino. And if you've ever read Gundam Sosei, I really believe that's actually what kind of person he is in real life. Because if you read any...
Our nipples are pink.
It's like, yeah, that's a Gundam. I'll just find a way to make it bigger.
No, I think the best part of Gundam Sosei manga is him trying to sell Ideon to the meeting board. It's like... And this is the school bus that the kids go to, and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, Tomino, Ideon.
If you have to have seen Ideon, but...
Watch the two movies of... If you've never seen the two movies of Ideon, and you like Tomino, holy shit, watch those movies. They're amazing. That second movie? Whoa!
So there's just to quickly...
back on G-Reco.
No, back... G-Reco, it's crazy. That there's nothing else to say about that.
I'm gonna wait until it's done to give final...
Yeah,
just like Turn A.
But I was gonna say, Bellfighters Try, really liking it. I like how that looks like it's supposed to be a kid's show, but I love how they set up such a great, they set up a great way of basically Gundam Fighting of the Week.
I think it has the best title, Gundam Bellfighters Try Hard, because that show tries to capture too much on this, like, the good feelings of the first season, and it can't make up its own mind if it wants to be its own show or, like, the same show, and it's just mixing them both, and it just makes
Strike's a bad recipe.
I think it's because it's the same team.
It's a bad recipe. I'm just going to put it this way. You know what was great in Billfighters? The rivalry were great. Like, you remember everyone. Mao.
True.
Niels. Fellini.
Hmm.
They were all great. Ayla. All those people. And then you get... Tell me about the antagonists of the show.
Oh,
holy shit, they're really bad.
We just met them.
Like, the Gunpla Academy. Wow, they're really interesting. But really bad.
But Luca Nemesis is coming back. Damien Nemesis?
Luca Nemesis.
Yeah, he's coming back in a crossbone Gundam.
That's the only thing that's hype about it. He's got a cross... Like, she is supposed to be the Ayla of this show. Like,
yeah, obviously.
And they just took Ayla, took out her entire great personality, and just put a blank character that smiles all the time. I can't believe their Gundams. They're so ugly. Oh my god.
I like
the portent is ugly. The transient is
I like them. I like the
and
variants.
The end is interesting. Despite being ugly, it's interesting looking, but yeah, they all look bad.
I like the variants. I like it.
The Zakus are the best looking.
You're not letting him get a word in on the
Zakus,
show.
The Zakus are the best looking mechas right now. How bad it is.
I gotta give him a chance to say
I do like the show, actually. I like how there's a lot of the different differences. Yes, I would say the first season was stronger. Yes, you remembered the characters a lot more, but they're introducing new characters. They're introducing a whole new kind of method of how the fights are being done. While before it was like one and a builder, now it's a group of three, and they could be builders as well.
I like that.
So they're expanding on it. I do agree that I'd like to see it tie in a bit more to what's going on from the original, because like the original, like it kind of ended at a note where like poof, he's gone. And it's like, why? What's that involved? Why is that? What do we get out of that? So I'm hoping that that's going to pull itself a bit more and try. But otherwise, I'm enjoying it.
I'll ask you a question that's really honest about it. What's the most memorable fight so far?
Nothing.
You haven't seen it, Keith.
You don't know that.
I know that for a fact.
Definitely not the one with the castle. I agree with you
with
that one.
What's the most memorable fight so far in the series? You know what it is? It's the Destiny versus the Build Burning. That was episode 6. That was the most memorable fight for me, because it felt like an actual fight.
I like
it. It didn't feel like a team just blasting through an entire team like this. I thought the fight at the end of their first arc in the first tournament was weak. Like, we saw Yuma take out the Mega Shiki like it was basically nothing. When we saw the Mega Shiki destroy the Argyagia, he then sort of survived but didn't do anything. He went to punch Sekai and just blew himself up.
I don't know.
The fight, okay, sure, the victory combined with the G fighter was sort of fun.
I wouldn't say that there's, like, would I say memorable? No, but I do enjoy like each time.
I think it's an enjoyable show, but it's just
okay.
It's not working.
You both bring up valid points. It's an okay show. It's nothing great. It's nothing bad. It's good for what Gundam. At least it's fun. You get to see a lot of cool designs. They're bringing out a whole bunch of mecha that we didn't see in the first one. They're actually doing a whole bunch of the new shows too.
I'm gonna give it something though. Trion Tree. Holy hell.
Yes,
100%.
And I never found. And this is the show that made me actually like the Double Zeta as a suit. So I'll give it that. If you're into Gundam, check it out. But if you haven't checked out Gundam, definitely go back to the first season. That's a much better introduction, quote unquote, into the Gundam series. Moving on, Log Horizon season 2. That's another carryover. We've talked about it a lot on the show. It's a lot of fun to watch.
I love it.
I'm glad they brought back the same opening from the first season. I don't think I would have liked it as much if they brought a different one. Because I was just like, man, it's season 2. I really hope we get Database again. But there's no way they're going to do that.
Boom starts again.
Yeah! I was like, woo! But it's a fun show. I like what they're doing with it. It's a bit slower now in the Magic Bag arc.
They finished like a huge arc that went off for like 12 episodes.
It's going to finish, I think, like season 2, but I think we're definitely getting a season 3, so...
It has some good popularity and some good rankings.
So I'm glad we're getting to explore all the characters and they're going through these arcs.
I think, like, if we compare the other show that's, like, based into an online game...
It's nothing like Sword Art Online.
It's a good thing. For once, both shows are very different, so a different set of people can enjoy it. On my personal opinion, I think Log Horizon is a much stronger show than Sword Art, because the characters are much more developed. I think the only thing in Log Horizon that I find really miss most of the time is the humor. I think the humor is a bit false, flat.
It's very hit or miss.
Like, the only character that really makes me laugh is, like, Natsugu, because he's my spirit animal.
The pervert knight.
Yeah, but he's so good. But that's basically the only one that can make me laugh. And the priest, like, the one who
wants to, like, the NPC wants the knowledge. Played by Keiji Fujikawa.
I like how they're going about it, especially right now with the kids and how they're growing and expanding on the thing and doing, trying to get the bag, and more of the story of the background of what's going on is working really well. Definitely stronger. It was a slow pace to start. It's still kind of slow, but I would almost say for those who haven't gone into it yet, wait till it's wrapped up and then just watch it in one go, and I think it'll be a lot better to watch and a lot more to get into.
Yes.
Then, like, it's a little trailing on episodic episodically, but still very enjoying it.
So right now, even the episodic episodes put enough of, like, background world building.
Yeah.
And you're still getting really good character development. And one of the things I was actually hoping for with the second season is that we would get to see a bit more of their non-online lives, and they've been doing that. So I felt like that was a natural evolution of the show and where it was going, and definitely.
I was a bit worried when Studio Dean, like, picked up the show, because it was satellite first. And one of the things that they didn't show too much in the satellite's version, but was not the problem. When you see them in the real world, they kind of look like the same person they look in the anime world.
Just slightly
what
different.
Studio Dean did was really smart to now just put different character designs when you show the real person in the real world to show the difference between them. Mm-hmm. Like, to the difference between what they look like in the game and what they look like in real life. Like, you can see Shiro, like, he looks like him in the game, but you see his eyes more Japanese. You're like,
very, yeah.
Oh, wow, they actually did that. Holy shit. It's really good. Some of the things I did like about that. Going on, yeah, who's watching Parasite?
Hey, I'm waiting until the season's done before I catch up on it.
Okay.
I looked into it a bit and
it's a great show, and Madhouse is just killing it on that show.
Yeah, Madhouse is doing a really great job with Parasite so far. I think it's one of the strongest shows that's been going on from the last season.
No one's surprised.
Easily, because it's got a very interesting universe. Very interesting characters.
And the manga is really good also, so...
And it's a great adaptation because they managed to brought a story from the early 90s into the 21st century properly without destroying the message of the show. Like, for example, people having cell phones now and computers now, because Migi reads a lot in the original manga because that's what they had back then, a lot of books. But now you can see him, sometimes he reads books, but most of the time he's just on the computer looking up stuff. So there's kind of little touches that shows that the people doing the show care about it and want to make a good thing out of it.
So back to Log Horizon, so I could talk about before you just change the topic.
Sorry, I didn't know.
Jackass.
Can you really blame him?
Yes, I can. I could blame anyone.
Sorry, that was a redundant question. I already had the answer to that question. I don't even know why I asked it.
Go ahead, Log Horizon 2.
I like Log Horizon 2, but I found, like, although they've improved it from season 1, there are things from season 1 that I sort of miss. I miss them leveling up, and their job roles seem to be, like, completely useless now. Mm-hmm. You know, in season 1, like, you had to learn how to cook to do stuff. Now it's like, oh, here's a magic apron, so your cooking level's high enough automatically.
No, but they show that you still have to be able to do it.
But you don't see them leveling up anymore. They sort of took it out. Like,
I think she's able to cook because she's a housewife.
Like, during the raid, not one of those characters leveled up. I thought it'd be cool if, like, they're hitting the newest levels above 90.
They actually were leveling up during that. They had done it many times. Some of them, if you looked at their level bars, some of them, you could tell that some of them actually, their levels have gone over. But a lot of them were above 90 to begin with also.
Yeah, they were above 90, but you didn't see them in the show go 92 to 93.
No.
And it didn't have like, oh, now here's some new skills. Like, I know they've invented new skills.
Yeah.
But they could have had like, oh, I learned this new skill in the menu. I wonder what it does because you're next level higher. Like,
I feel like you haven't watched the show because all these points you're bringing up have actually been done.
Yeah.
Like, her getting her new skill pops up in a menu, and it's like, oh, you've realized how to do a new skill. Oh, I get how this works now.
The secret one. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But those are the kinds of things, yeah.
Yeah, but that wasn't based on level. That was just based on learning.
The teachings, yeah.
Yeah, the teachings.
Well, the game was only designed to go up to 90, initially.
No, yeah, but with this thing, it goes up to 100, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I expected, like, a pop-up for new moves for that, too. So they took that out. And I find that a little annoying. And they also introduced, in season 1, they introduced that thing where, like, I could lower my level to hang out with the kids so they could level up at the same time. They haven't done that since then either.
Though. That's true.
So they had, like, these ideas for season 1 that just didn't continue. And I don't know if it didn't continue because people were just like, yeah, this is a stupid idea.
Or if the novels actually dropped in.
Well, yeah, some of these, like, the whole lowering your level to level up with the kids was not necessary.
Yeah, it's more like maybe world building.
And even then, the only time he did it at first was when he first met them.
I think if
thing that's really interesting now about second season is how like the flavor text are now important to the weapons now.
Yeah, but they glossed over that really quick. It's like, look, super important thing. All right, the kids are taking a trip.
That's what I find with this anime. Like, I really like it, and I think it's super good. But they seem to be glossing over or skipping things really quickly. Like, they'll make it important for their arc or for that one episode, and then after that, it's sort of like second burner.
Well, this is one of the things where you have to remember it is based off of a light novel. Sometimes with light novels is that they'll be the, like, in Sword Art Online, a lot of that first part was what was actually the first Sword Art Online, which goes through, like, a few episodes, and the middle parts of it were, like, another book, which was what happened also during that time to introduce other characters.
Sword Art Online was another
show. So you gotta remember with light novels, sometimes what happens is that there are concurrent storylines going on, so the whole Krusty thing is probably gonna be dealt with in either later this season or in another season, but I feel like a lot of what the show does is it tells you something to generate interest, it keeps going on with what it was doing, but then it brings it with always still subtly referencing it, and then it, just so it can bring it back, when it brings it into full view, it's not like, oh, what is this new thing that came out of nowhere?
Where I don't know, I just like season one, Shinji, I think that's the name, the glass guy.
Shiro.
Hey. He does the magic spell to make the computer guy a real boy. And then sort of nothing else follows that afterwards.
No, I think that's building up to...
Well, they've already explained that a lot of the things that they can do are not programmed in the game originally.
No, I know that. But, like, you would expect like that was sort of a game-changing moment. And then the next episode just went on with that without, like, no repercussions, no, like... Now, what happens to this guy now that he's a real person?
He wasn't made into a real person.
Well, yeah, he was made as an adventurer.
He was just added to...
He now is an immortal guy that can die and come back. But, like, the whole point of going dying and coming back is you lose your memories of the real life. What happens to him? Like, they don't explain anything. Well, they sort of just, like, drop that off, too.
Well, you gotta
There's a big section
Not for the normal adventurers.
I think you're expecting payoff way too soon, and there's a thing called build-up that we do in stories.
Watch an anime, most of them have zero build-up.
Well, that's what's good about this.
No, but I think they are building up. There is the whole Shiro and...
It doesn't seem like a random thing. It seems like the author is really, like, onto something. Like, yeah. He has an idea. He has a point A and a point Z. Like, he knows where he's going.
Yeah, I just would prefer between point A and point Z, there'd be little things that show the differences.
No, fair enough.
Like, little hits.
Fair enough.
And I think that's what I...
Like, I don't want to be like, this happened in the ending of season one. Season three, episode four, alludes back to that and continues on.
And I think
I don't think it's doing that either.
Yeah, but like, there's a lot of things that right now have been sort of left up.
I think it just goes back to like what I was saying. It feels like it's being stretched a bit, and like that's why it's slow paced a bit. So I can understand Keith's.
And I really like the anime. Like, I wouldn't notice these things if I didn't care.
Honestly, I think it's one of those things like it's a light novel. Probably what would have happened is what happens in the light novel is that they probably go straight into the flavor text coming real kind of arc. On the side note, there'll probably have been a lot of time skips, but there are some volume released later on that was, oh, this was happening with these characters on the side. Because when you're writing a light novel, they're a lot slower, well, smaller, so they can't put as many character development pieces in, so that's why they write like 50 of them. Anyway, I think what you're looking for is actually in there. It's just that you want more of an instant gratification, and I think the show is trying to give you just one gigantic orgasm at the end while still putting that build up there.
I don't know. We'll see.
It's obviously written by a man, because if it was a woman, there'd be like multiple orgasms, and this is just like one big spew.
Same thing. Yeah.
One of the follow-up of last season I'm still watching, I think it's the genuinely best train wreck in a very long time. Super enjoyable. Super great show to watch with friends, make fun of, and then get involved in. Cross Eng.
I have not seen that.
No clue.
I have not watched that.
Oh shit, it's written by the guy who wrote Gundam Seed and Seed Destiny, Fukuda.
Oh no!
No.
I was gonna say, I thought it was just directed.
He makes so much fun of himself that it's perfect. Honestly, it's a really... I don't want to call it a bad show. How can I call it?
Incredibad?
It's a bad anime.
For those cult people who likes dumb shit.
You know what? It's the Room of Enemy.
And that's why I'm not going to watch it.
Actually, the Room is...
Mark.
You're tearing me apart!
Tearing me apart, Lisa!
Oh, hi, Mark.
You a chicken. Choo, 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 choo. Anyway, so Cross
Eng. You're my favorite customer.
Cross Eng is great. I'm just gonna say it right now, Cross Eng.
Like sarcastically great or like legit great? Or like in the middle?
How can I say it? It's lit. Okay, because I'm having a good time. I'm watching it with a roommate and a friend. And we're basically laughing all the time. And sometimes we're like, this is genuinely entertaining. I think it's one of the most honest, balls to the wall, insanely, weirdly written show produced. I'm surprised
just that to make
Fukuda
you laugh.
Is making it.
So just to make
he's
you laugh.
He's producing it.
No, he's making it. He's
the director on it.
He's the director.
Okay.
And I don't think his wife is writing it, so.
Nope. And it shows that his wife is off the board.
All right. I just want to wrap it really quickly, but I wanted to talk about it. Shingatsu, Kimi, no.
Yeah. Just say your line, April. Just say your line, April.
Your line.
I didn't even know it was called that.
I said it the first
anyway,
time.
Anyway, really good anime. Very like slice of life type of thing. Very serious about a pianist who...
I didn't hear that properly, but a pianist. All right,
a pianist who's renowned as a kid. His mother dies tragically and it's affected him. And then it's sort of in the story of like almost it repeating, but with someone else in his life and all that. Very strong. If you like an emotional... anime, that would be one to watch. And then I mentioned it in I think a previous episode, but Shinobako, just this whole how animes work and all the sections and how difficult it can be.
I don't have a donut with me right now, but if I had
oh yeah, the whole donut, yeah. Nut yeah really good at, if you liked what was the other one with the manga?
Bakuman.
If you liked Bakuman, Shinobako, same kind of
sort of feelings, I guess.
I would say the other one is a bit more like competitive, I find. Well, this one's more like informative.
Bakuman was done by the same woman who wrote Death Note, so yeah.
So, but this one I'm enjoying as well.
Cool. Just to throw out there for your line, April, good opening.
Got to you real quick.
Good animation. Give it a look. I'm gonna go check it. It's on my list to check out soon. So that was just a few
a lot.
The shows we've been watching from this season and the carryover from the last season. You should give a few of them a look. If anything caught your ear, then definitely go check it out. There's some decent anime in the pile of crap that's coming out this season, at least. I'm not lying there.
Blade works next season, baby.
So join us in the next segment where we'll be giving you our info. All right, and that was episode 12 of Geeking Out at the Tower podcast. Apparently, some hot-off-the-presses news came in last minute. Outdated reference. So, Peter, would you like to tell us about this?
So, right now, Sony Pictures Entertainment has announced a new partnership with Marvel Studios to bring Spider-Man into this Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, they're expecting the next Spider-Man film for July 28, 2017.
So, that sounds awesome. It'll be interesting if they can now pull Spider-Man into the Civil War movie as well.
That's probably what they're trying to do.
Which I think they've been trying to push for that for a while, so this is awesome news. I think it'll be interesting.
Oh, wow, and they actually moved a few of the dates of their other movies to fit it in, too.
Nice!
Wow.
So that means it's
So I guess not to interfere.
I hope it's Spider-Man and Hulk have a day in the city.
Okay, actually, that'd be awesome.
Alright!
Hooray! I want to see an awesome Spider-Man feels down because the people of New York don't like him, and then Captain America gives him a very rousing speech that makes me cry.
Looking forward to it.
I'm excited about it too. The only thing that might be sad is that Andrew Garfield's no longer Spider-Man, but at least he's no longer Peter Parker. They're going to recast Spider-Man for sure.
Yeah. It better not be another Tobey Maguire.
And that's the thing, because
If we combine Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, if either could play either, that would have been the perfect Spider-Man.
Garfield makes a weird Peter Parker, but he makes an amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly.
And the opposite of Maguire. Maguire made a good geeky Peter Parker, like early Peter Parker.
Yeah.
But then you
remember Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, and then you
Peter
realize
Parker,
it doesn't
like,
work.
No.
Yeah.
Andrew Garfield is a much better Spider-Man.
Peter, your thoughts on it?
Better ass too.
I think this is going to be an interesting time with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and see where Marvel takes this character, which people have dying for years to see how Marvel takes this character. Yeah, money everywhere.
It's going to be interesting if Fox is going to follow their steps.
I doubt it.
No.
The X-Men are doing pretty
Fox
well for them.
That's the thing. The X-Men are doing very well on their own. And Spider-Man is, I heard, it's kind of rushing a bit. So
they're struggling. So as usual, you can send us an email at gottcast@gmail.com. You can send us a tweet on Twitter telling us interesting things at gottcast. As usual, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/gottcast. Send us a like, tell us your thoughts on this episode, tell us what anime you're watching. You can also find us on Instagram at gottpodcast. I think that's what the link is. As usual, you can find us on iTunes iTunes, just search Geeking Out at the Tower podcast in the search bar.
What about the Zune network?
Yeah, screw Zune.
Wow.
No, I just...
We don't care.
Yeah, screw Zune. No, I'm kidding.
The Zune.
It's no longer about Zune. It's all about Stitcher.
Oh.
As usual, you can find all this information and many other interesting things on our website at gottcast.wordpress.com. I was your host, Andrew, and today I was joined by...
Kevin.
Keith.
Wendell.
Peter the Second.
And Xavier from the DiddyCast.com. Visit us right now. We're dead for the last year and a half.
Thanks for listening and have a good time.